Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Archie Bell of the Thrills of Houston, Texas. We don't only sing, but we dance just as good as we want. In Houston, we've just started a new dance called the Tighten Up. This is the music we tighten up with. First, tighten up on the drum. Come on now, drummer. Want you to tighten it up for me now. Oh, yeah. Tighten up on that bass now. Tighten it up. Yeah. Now let that guitar fall in. Yeah. Tighten up on your organ now.
Yeah, you do the tighten up. Yeah, now. I said if you can do it now, the show will be tough.
Now look here. Now look here. Come on now. Now make it mellow.
Let's tighten it up now. Do the tighten up. Everybody can do it now, so get to it. We're gonna tighten up, let's do the tighten up. You can do it now, so baby get to it. Let's do your left now, let's do your right. Everybody can do it, but don't you get too tight. Come on and tighten up, let's tighten it up now. Let's tighten it up now, tighten it up.
Come on now, Billy. Sign it up.
Oh,
yeah. Sign it up. Come on. Sign up that bass. Oh, yeah. Now, look here. I want that guitar to fall in on that. Sign it up now. Oh, yeah. Now, sign it up, Augie. Yeah, now, everybody sign it up now. Now, look here. We gon' make it mellow for you now. We gon' make it mellow now.
We're tying it up. You can get it. Move to your left. Move to your right. Tying it up now. Everything will be out of sight. Come on and tighten it up. Tighten it up now. You can do it. So baby, get to it.
Okay, we have had a little bit of difficulty here, and I do not know what the story is. As a matter of fact, we're trying to get back on. I know I'm back on live with you, but my studio is not up, so I have to sign back in. This is the that was the wrong one, so I'm not back into my show yet. Hold on a minute, folks. I'm sure I am online, but I don't know if anybody else can hear me. What is going on here? This is a little complicated. I could see that I'm online, but I could not tell whether or not I was transmitting out. So for your attentive listening, ladies and gentlemen, and for everybody out there who likes Blue Magic, let's have one of their songs, because this is how I feel right now.
Hurry, hurry. Right up. See, the show is past for only 15 seconds.
Don
Cornelius. Anyway, we're, I think, practically together here. What happened was that the printer jammed. All the printing stuff couldn't. I was printing more stuff up for the show.
We always
got more than what we need. And just in case some of these elected officials and other people don't show up on the air, we could just, instead of going blah, 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 we can do something.
Well, you know, it's actually also because too much happens every week.
Oh, man. I really need to do.
You know, just calm down with the scandals and the crazy laws and the insane statements.
Listen,
we'd be able to keep it.
I just want to tell you, I had someone filling in for you for a little while last week.
Who was that?
And they said that they would work for half what you're getting.
Uh-oh. I see.
So I'm considering, the person's name is Blake.
Ah, Sir Blake.
Yes.
Wait, I know.
He said that he'd be willing to work for Cocoa Puffs.
Ah, well, that would be just about half.
So I don't know. We're going to have to renegotiate your contract here. I mean, but he did say he only wanted the chocolate Cocoa Puffs. So now, and I noticed in the store that they are a little more expensive than the regular ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kind of have the
so
name
now,
brand.
Now, if you take the regular Cocoa Puffs, we might be able to work out something. I mean,
right.
It's, we'll you know, it's, but anyway, we got GM scandals. We got mayor scandals. We have, I mean, oh, and next week we're going to have to put some more because you're talking about these daggone moronic people from, of course, the Progressive Party.
Mm-hmm.
Who, if I can find this here, I just want to see if I can find this one thing here that was said a long time ago, and after I play it, I will tell you the reason why I'm playing it, and let me see if I can dig it up here because I think it's very, very, very important to say why. Well, you'll understand. Well, I'm going to play it right now.
In Slate, they have a piece on .com. Santa Claus should not be a white man anymore. And when I...
The wrong one.
In,
that's
in
the wrong one.
Of
right.
Office, Mr.
Yeah,
last
right,
letter.
Yeah.
Good evening, everybody. This is Archie Bunkeroo for 704 Hauser Street, veteran of the Big War, speaking on behalf of Guns for Everybody. Now, question. What was the first thing that the communists done when they took over Russia? Answer, gun control. And there's a lot of people in this country who want to do the same thing to us here in a kind of conspiracy, see. You take your big international bankers, they want to, what do you call, masticate the people of this here nation like puppets on a wing. And then when they get that done, turn us over to the communists.
Archie, I'm glad they put you on a stool. You look tall and sitting down.
Now, I want to talk about another thing that's on everybody's mind today, and that's your stick-ups and your skyjackets, which, if that was up to me, I could end the skyjackets tomorrow.
You could?
All you got to do is arm all your passengers. You know, and then he ain't got no more superiority there. He ain't going to dare to pull out no rod. And then your airlines, then they wouldn't have to chase the passengers on the ground no more. They just pass out the pistols at the beginning of the trip, and they pick them up again at the end. Case closed.
That's incredible, huh? What do you mean?
Now, there's a reason why I played that. And we're going to go more into depth next week with the soundbite from the moron who's the head of Homeland Security, the head of Homeland Security for the Progressive Party in the United States. Now, let me show you, let me play another little contact here.
20 shots were fired in a post-mortem pool. No confirmation on that. They are desperately trying to find something. I do know that we, Fox News, that we have helicopters headed there so that we can cover this and bring the very latest to people as this situation unfolds. Where is the Secretary of Defense, by the way, since obviously this is a military installation?
Well, the Secretary of Defense is in Hawaii right now. He is en route to a 10-day tour of Asia. He's been meeting with Asian defense ministers out in Hawaii at the Pacific Command. So he is not in Washington right now. He is in Hawaii en route to Asia in the next few days. The Secretary of the Army was on Capitol Hill when he got word of the shooting. He left the reception where he was. He confirmed to our Chad Pergram that there had been casualties. We've spoken to Army officials down at Fort Hood, and we can confirm that there is an active shooter situation. They have not relinquished that alert system. There were sirens going off all evening, and people are told to stay where they are. And I don't mean to take a I didn't mean that to be a slap at Secretary Hagel when I asked where he was. He's in Hawaii working, and obviously had no notice of this. So I didn't, you know, I realize we all hear Hawaii and we think something else. But Jennifer, thank you. If you'll stand by as we continue to follow.
Now, from this crooked face, which her face is crooked since she got that 19 plastic surgeries from Fox News, you notice how they just rubbed that in about, oh, we didn't want to make any inference since he was in Hawaii, because when you go to Hawaii, you're always on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Obama?
Like,
yeah, he's on vacation when he goes to Hawaii.
Right.
Not that he grew up there or that he lives there. No, no, that has nothing to do with it. Anyway, the reason why I'm saying this is because the moronic of Homeland Security said he must have been reading Archie Bunker. He said, we need to have every member of the military be authorized to carry a concealed weapon, and none of this ever would happen. He said, because they all know how to shoot and handle a gun.
Yeah.
Bo, that is not true.
And half the time, unfortunately, they're the ones shooting.
You think? That is not true. Just because you're in the military, that don't mean you're authorized and can shoot and you are a marksman. That is baloney. The only people that need to know how to shoot are those who are in the combat platoon, combat group, a combat battalion. They know how to shoot. A clerk at the base motor pool does not need to know how to shoot. A clerk at the hospital does not need to qualify for a damn rifle.
Yeah, but
this is absolute bull.
This is their response to everything. Every time there's a disaster, a shooting, a tragedy, anywhere in this country, they say, more guns. Remember, they're a response to school shootings. Let's arm all the teachers. Let's arm all the custodians. Let's arm all the, you know, this is ridiculous. I guess, if you look at their laws they pass, the stand your ground laws, the concealed weapon carry everywhere, into churches, into everywhere in the states that they control. Their apparent desire, plan, or wish is to have everyone in America armed at all times. And then they said all crime would cease, which is BS. The more weapons you introduce into it, it's just like...
Don't we have more killings here in the United States because people got guns?
Look, it cracks me up about the whole, you know, we shouldn't limit weapons. It says right there in the Constitution. But yet we do limit weapons all the time.
Absolutely.
Because, like, you know, I like to go hang out at all the comic book conventions and movie conventions and sci-fi stuff and all that. Well, people dress up and put on uniforms and do all that thing. Guess what? You cannot walk around in public with a sword. You can't walk around with a dagger. You can't walk around with any of these.
Why? Why not?
Weapons.
Why? But
law.
Why? But you could also. But you can walk around with a gun.
Yeah,
but you can't walk around with a sword.
And this is what I just—it's ridiculous on its face. The reason there are so many shootings in America is because
swords don't kill; people kill.
Yeah. Especially barbarians. But I bet you there would be a skyrocketing number of. Sword incidents if everybody were armed with a sword. You know, I mean, come on, this is just stupid. You know?
It is so ludicrous.
The reason,
ludicrous.
Their inference doesn't ever play out, because if you look at our society compared to a less advanced society, say, somewhere that doesn't have as much money, right? We have far more car crashes, say, than, you know, tribal, I don't know, Amazonia. That's, in their view, oh, well, then let's hurry up and give every man, woman, and child a car, and there'll be less crashes. No, there'll be more crashes.
Hey.
Right?
Hey.
So it just doesn't, they have the logical flaw going on.
Now,
love it.
Now, I mean, you're a little ludicrous. We had a...
more guns.
Well, guns don't kill. People kill.
People with guns, really.
People with guns kill.
You know what happened in my day? You get mad at somebody. You're really angry at somebody. You punch them.
Punch them with a gun.
Yeah, now.
Punch them with a gun.
Now punch them with my 9 millimeter.
Punch them with my 9 millimeter.
Yeah, hollow point right through their face. That's what I
mean to tell you. It is getting so unbelievable. Anyway.
I just want some of that music. I got to get it on my phone or something. So I just walk around all day long with, like, the Good and the Bad and the Ugly or some Charles Bronson, something whistling and playing in the background, some harmonica going. Every time I walk into a room, people flee.
Yeah, well. Yeah, like he's sitting in
the man with no name, the gunslinger.
He's sitting in the chair, and he's sitting in the chair, and the guys, people in the town are looking, and all of a sudden. Is that a sword you pack or you split a CD? I mean to tell you.
Yeah. Oh. Armed and David is armed and redneck. Yeah.
Hey,
it's ludicrous.
These people are so ludicrous. It's just unbelievable.
It is just, but the thing is, it happens over and over. Like even this Fort Hood, we just had a horrible shooting there years ago. Now here we go again. I mean, and their answer is the same. More guns. Let's have more. Let's have less restrictions.
I mean, when does ever more make you better off? Let me have more cake, Mommy. Right. Your stomach's going to hurt. Ma, I want more cake. I want more candy. Mommy, your teeth are going to run out. Mommy, so when has more been better?
Yeah.
Only greed since Ronald Reagan and Wall Street. Greed is good. That's it.
Geckoism.
Since Ronald Reagan and Wall Street, greed has been good.
Mm-hmm.
No other time has greed been good.
You know what we should have? Instead of just having gigantic SUVs and Humvees prowling the streets at burning, oil, like, out the back, we should just have all derricks on the back, like the flames thing. But instead of that, we should just go ahead and ratchet up a notch and arm all those suckers. Because, traffic problems would be alleviated, too, if we just had gun ports on the front of our cars.
Oh, well, of course.
It'd be like the old rat patrol. We could just put a big machine gun right in the back and have a friend arm it, going down the highway. Look at that guy. He's going to cut you off. Right?
Does this even sound? Yes, of course
this
not.
It's their world, though. It's like Mad Maxville.
Have
you seen Mad Maxville?
Oh,
that's what it is.
Oh.
The Wild West.
Now, we have to take you in because you shouldn't have shot that person. Because they walked in front of you on the street. They cut you off.
If they walk in front of you, that is infringing upon your castle. That's moving as you walk down the sidewalk.
Oh.
So then it's your defensive right to blast them out of the crosswalk because they have entered your defined territory.
They've entered your space.
Yeah.
And, whenever you enter somebody else's space, as a matter of fact, I was talking to Blake the other day, and he was...
Carrington?
Blake Carrington. And I was reading something, so he came over to me, and he was rubbing on my shoulder, looking over my head, and I said, "What do you want?" He says, "Am I in your space?" I said, "Yeah, you're in my space." He said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "We learned about that today in school, about being in people's space."
Rubbing all over your space. I love it. Only space I need.
He said, "Do you mind me being in your space?" I said, "No." He said, "But some people don't like that." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Anybody told you not to be in their space?" He says, "No." So they're learning about this in the kindergarten now, about being in other people's space.
Right.
So I just hope they don't learn about, well, if you're in the space, you can shoot them.
The only person I need in my space is Captain Kirk.
Hey, that's it. Or Chris Christie. But then it would be his space if he was in your space. because they would no longer be yours to take.
Be one of those aliens that you encounter on a mission.
But anyway, we have had a sort of a similar situation here that's going on. How about GM?
Yeah, you know, here's two things I'm going to say about that. First, hey, doesn't history repeat itself? Seems like we were doing this every decade, you know. But here's one good thing I will say about it. We just got finished with Toyotaville. You remember that was the week before or whatever when they had the largest settlement ever.
Right.
And now we got GM going down the same road. Apparently they don't learn lessons very well. But one thing that I'll say is different about this. Do you notice under this president, there's actually enforcement? And they're doing things like, you know, hey, here's a consumer law being violated. Why don't we investigate? Because there was this big period before the Obama administration where we ceased oversight of every company and where they just threw ethics in the garbage can. If you remember, under the Bush years, we could do anything, including, you know, rape and torture people on film.
Right.
And it still doesn't get prosecuted.
That's right.
But they had, you remember, they were handing cash out. The House of Representatives, no charges filed, no nothing was done against them.
What?
They didn't even investigate for ethics filing. You know, nothing. I was like, oh, yeah, you know. So it was kind of I think it's a good thing. And I'm glad that all this is happening. I was like, why are so many things happening? Because the government is functioning.
Well, before we get too far down the rabbit hole with GM, you're right, they were handing cash out. So how the heck can we hold Patrick Cannon up for something he did when we know they hand cash out in the daggone House of Representatives on the floor? They have done it.
Yes.
And now the Supreme Court has said, hey, you're going to give up to $33.5 million per person.
Mm-hmm.
The ethics laws are gone.
But that's their dream come true.
I mean, so are we blaming Patrick Cannon for something they have been doing forever, and now it's legal according to the Supreme Court?
You know, when they're in charge and when they're not in charge. There's the unequal application of the law, we'll say.
Unbelievable. I mean, all charges need to be dismissed against Patrick Cannon.
Yeah.
They need to be. Well, he didn't do anything illegal, as far as I'm concerned now.
I think he did something illegal, but however...
Oh, yeah, but not according to the law.
Well, he didn't do anything that they don't do
right.
all the time.
Right,
so, and that does get to the point because, you know, we saw, what was his name, out of Vitter, whatever his name was?
Yeah, Vitter.
Mr. Prostitution.
Yes, Mr. Prostitution.
Guy, you know, Mr. Family Values, Mr. Let's Shut Down Funding for Everything Else. Now, he's... you know, caught up in all these prostitution scandals.
Right.
He gets reelected. You know, and then we got Mr. Appalachian Trail, you know, hanging out in South America. Yeah, he gets reelected. But the Republicans are so hypocritical on these issues. It's not even funny.
Oh, I see.
If Obama had a mistress or was, you know, banging an aide and putting the dress in the box or something, I guarantee you they'd impeach him and them out, just like they try and open, right?
Of course.
That's the way they operate. But when they do anything, it's just, hey, did I blow your face off? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, well, getting to, yeah.
We were off track.
Yeah. But no, we're going to get back to GM. So, I found the connecting place that I want
to get. The GM a little bit. But about you're talking about getting rid of ethics in the court case. I think they love this thing. They just love it about them. Corporations are people, and corporations have rights too. And they
That's right.
Money is speech.
But they have more rights.
So they can,
because they're job creators.
You know, well, if that's the case, and if they're going to beat people and all that kind of stuff, then I just say let's go all the way. Let's take it to a logical conclusion. A person can run for office. Why don't we have
a corporation
versus Home Depot versus, you know,
absolutely
Exxon for the next election?
And the CEO could
right
run.
Now,
he could represent them.
They're people. They have rights. They have privileges. And one of their privileges is they can pour any amount of billions of dollars into these races and buy an election. And So let's just cut out the middleman and cut out the dance. If you're going to buy, right,
cut out the facade of everything you're supposed to be.
Just go ahead and
you know,
elect,
fair.
Let's let elect, you know. Be,
well, they Republicans started that already with the criminal Blofeld from the Republican Party, Adelson.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually Blofeld. He's
right.
Now convened seven people. He's going to handpick who's going to run for the Progressive Party.
Because they all came out to L.A. and Vegas.
Right.
Blew it.
Kiss
I mean,
the cat.
That's what they call it. Kiss the ring.
No,
blow,
kiss the cat.
Blowing.
Blofeld.
But, yeah. So, I mean, they literally, you know, you've got the Koch brothers buying up everything. You got Adelson buying up everything, you know. And I'm just, if you're going to have these ridiculous rulings that, you know, what we had, eminent domain trumps your right to your own property.
Good.
We have corporations are now people, Citizens United. And then we've got this, any amount of corporate money is now free speech.
Absolutely.
So if that's the case, screw it. I want to vote for Exxon and BP at the next election.
Absolutely.
Let's just be done with it.
Maybe
why do we have to have a mouthpiece? Why do we have to have crews? Or
absolutely. So these guys are not my mouthpieces.
No, they're just doing what they're told.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
Obviously, if they have to run out to Vegas to get approval, I mean, you know.
And right now we have the People's Choice candidate on the phone. Mr. David Adams, how are you?
How you doing, Michael? Always a pleasure. Hello, Thomas. How are you, sir?
Hello, sir.
So, as the people's choice, are you running for office?
I'm excited. People.
As the people's choice, are you running for office?
No, I'm not running for political office, Michael. I'll leave that to you guys.
Hey, you're the people's choice. Get in here. I mean, you need to run for office. Hey, listen.
Hey, I'm just thankful that anybody's representing people. I mean, you know, I'll vote.
Oh, that's right. You couldn't get elected if you represent the people.
Yeah.
Yeah, incorporate yourself. Make yourself the people's corporation. Maybe you can get elected. So, David, tell us, what's on the news hot wire today?
Well, as you very well know, Michael, the story of Shannon Amudi is continuing to met its way through the system, pretty much stalled. We just need to try to continue to get word out there. I was notified today that, unfortunately, the North Carolina State of Appeals, Court of Appeals, denied the habeas that was filed on his behalf. And I got a copy of the letter. It wasn't an actual order by the judges. That's a three-judge panel for the appellate court. But it was just a letter from the clerk of courts indicating that the court had denied the habeas. So right now, the next step is to take that case, march on to the state Supreme Court, because ultimately the U.S. District Court is the ultimate goal, but you have to go through the protocol. You know, she can't, you know, evade any levels or any aspects of, you know, the judicial branch for that state. So, you know, we're just looking forward to seeing what she'll get from the Supreme Court, the highest court in that state.
I mean, hopefully she won't get her car towed to another county. That's what I'm worried about. But will she on this letter, though, was there a specific reason, or is it just a generic rejection?
Well, it was just a letter stating that the court had denied it, and it, at the bottom it had notice, service of notice to the Attorney General's office, Roy Cooper, Ms. Crudup, as well as, I forget, another court, yeah, the Superior Court. There's no order, and I implored her to try to solicit from them some type of actual written order from that panel, because to just get a letter saying that the court's denied it is not sufficient. They would have to present, you know, the actual order that was written, and, you know, and what grounds, what law, what statute was cited. The fact that they didn't include any of that in there, to me, seems like it was a strong reason for the Supreme Court to hear it.
Exactly. That's what I'm curious about. It just seems, again, like a sidestep rather than a legal process.
Yeah, that, I mean, I just don't understand. I don't understand why she was, you know, just given a letter. I don't know if that's a common practice in North Carolina to just receive a letter from the court, from the clerk of courts, indicating that the court denied a habeas. You know, I've never heard of anything like that.
Wow. This I tell you what, this case boggles my mind. Every week I talk to you, I think, you know, it'll start clearing up, you know, the mud will settle, and I'll be able to see some through the water. And I'm telling you, this is the most bizarre thing I've ever heard in my life. Because nothing ever makes.
Well, the problem is that you know, unfortunately, Shannon's story is a very disturbing one when you talk about you know, constitutional rights and the right to speedy trial, 6th and 14th Amendments, and all of that. But I think this is something that's indigenous to the penal system in North Carolina. I don't think he's the only one. I would imagine there's a volume of others that are being held for an indefinite period of time. You know, pending a court trial or pending their case being brought back before the courts, the fact that the clerk of courts has admitted that, you know, the forms, there are forms, pre-printed forms used to hide people within the system when there's not sufficient evidence to prosecute them. And as we can see in Shannon's case, what they're doing is putting people in isolation to kind of, you know, force or cause people to cop to some sort of plea arrangement or plea agreement under duress. Therefore, it wouldn't be any need to have a trial or any of the evidence, which in most cases probably are non-existent, it would have a need to even be concerned about that because the court or a jury would never hear that. So if you got a guy locked up, you got him on segregation for a year or two, eventually at some point the psyche of a human being is going to, you know, be altered to such state that the person will be inclined to do anything to just get relief from such horrific living conditions. So, you know, I don't think, you know, like I said, although Shannon's case is disturbing, I don't think it's just he's unique. I think this is something that's indigenous to the entire penal system in the state of North Carolina.
Right. Which is actually more disturbing than just a one-off case, you know, because if it's systemic, then it's truly horrific rather than being a, you know, a monster out in some county that does this to innocent people. So, okay, well, just very depressing news. How, by the way, is the mom doing? Last, you know, I talked with you was actually after the horrors of the beating and everything else. So how is she holding up?
Yeah, Ms. Crudup appears to be holding up pretty well. Actually, she had she was summoned by the Dunn City Police in the town where that incident occurred, and she had an interview with the investigators who were conducting a departmental investigation into what happened with her. And it was strange to find out that the questions that they posed to her, or their inquiries, rather, didn't focus on the gentleman who actually, you know, physically assaulted her, but rather the supervisor. They were concerned as to, you know, what the supervisor did. You know, what did he say? What his actions were on the day of the incident. So in my mind, it appears that the investigation has shifted. Typically when, you know, folks start talking about, well, what did others do, or others' activities were response at the time of such incident, it typically infers that perhaps the mother's allegations have been founded, based on incident reports written by others. And I think, you know, oftentimes you have investigators they just solicit information to find out, you know, what people did, what their actions were, because that reflects their actual incident report from that particular day. So I don't know. I mean, they just appeared to be more concerned about the supervisor as opposed to the guy who actually did the beating. So I don't know if that's an indication that the investigation is going into a positive direction or what. But I do know that for a fact that they were more concerned about the supervisor's actions as opposed to the person who actually assaulted this woman.
Well, and, you know, say the supervisor should have done something. So I think they're investigating him to find out, because whatever this guy Wise, I think his name is, he he probably said that, well, they know the supervisor is there because they can go over the 911 calls and the police calls. So they want to find out what the supervisor did and see if it coincides with what he said he did. So I don't think they're questioning Shannon's mother as much as they are questioning what and why the supervisor didn't intercede.
Yeah, I agree. You know, like I said, Michael, you know, it's a situation where I believe they more than likely have, you know, found it, you know, based on information that they have from other officers' reports and her written statement. You know, they probably found it that more than likely he did physically assault her. I know she's produced medical records at this point. And then also, the officer's own report, he kind of inferred that she said that he beat her. He actually inputted a statement that she made, you know, when he asked her, you know, something, asked her a question, and she said to the officer, well, what are you going to do, beat that out of me too? This guy wrote this in his report. Okay, so he kind of infers that the woman's been saying that she was beaten all along, you know, by his own admission in his report, and I have a copy of that report. So like I said, I believe that the investigators probably have found it, her allegations, and probably just, you know, trying to find out exactly what else occurred, what other you know, departmental laws or rules were broken, you know, by questioning what the supervisor did. And you're right, they can determine whether or not the supervisor was there, because once he's on the scene, he's got to let KGA know. He's got to let the dispatch know that he's on the scene.
Absolutely. And there was another cop on the scene also, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there were two other cops on the scene.
Right. We see...
They were there to serve and protect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's...
Well, see, we don't know what those cops said in their reports, though. Okay?
That's...
You know, and that may be the reason why... That may be the cause why, you know, scrutiny is being placed on a supervisor now.
So we've heard anything further from the interested other agencies like national media or the college that's investigating?
Well, you know, with all of those, we just have to sit and wait, because it was brought to my attention today. I was speaking with Dr. Randy Short, a journalist out of Washington, D.C. He told me that, you know, these people, particularly the gentleman from the Black Agenda and the journalist who broke the case with the guy being sodomized by the New York City police, Utrecht Lee, she's now down in Florida. These folk get, you know, complaints and stories all the time, from all over the country. So, you know, you have to kind of just, like, revisit it with them, you know, depending upon what they're doing. It's just a slow process, you know. These kinds of cases are just slow. And unfortunately, in this country, you know, it's just looked upon, a case like Shannon's just looked upon just another black man. So, you know, it doesn't get the kind of scrutiny or the kind of public access that you would want it to have. But unfortunately, just a waiting game oftentimes.
And I think in the case of Shannon, this even worse, because he's just disappeared. There's not a Rodney King video beating or something that people can see and rally around, because he's just gone. He's just locked away and magically disappeared from the scene, and nobody can see him or talk to him or anything else.
And you know, it's just like, what was that letter that the clerk of court said, just the better signs when he wants people to disappear? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, that's what they do, man. You know, by the admittance of the clerk of courts down there, that form, you know, I had questioned that when I first saw it. I'd never seen an official court document for a felony crime of this nature, where you have what appears to be a pre-printed form with handwritten, with the information, the vital information written in it in handwriting. I've never seen anything like that. So I questioned that, and that was one of the questions that I had Ms. Beth when she met with the clerk of courts to pose to her. You know, when they saw the document, the lady said, this is my handwriting. And she just politely explained that this is the form that we use when the judge doesn't have enough evidence or enough information to prosecute a case. They use this to hide people. You know, and my concern is, you know, since when is it the judge's decision when a case is, the type of evidence that exists? Typically, if the evidence is not there, shouldn't the judge be throwing the case out? I mean, I'm not understanding it at all.
It turns everything on its head.
Is this because
it's supposed to be you're free and clear until there's overwhelming evidence that we can prosecute you of a crime. This is, we'll just hold you forever until we find something we can use against you.
I mean, you're talking about violation of the 14th Amendment. I mean, give me a freaking break. That is just amazing that they even admit to that.
Well, they had nothing to hide because, as you very well know, Michael, the clerk of courts is an elected official. She's not bound by the sheriff. She's not bound by the judges or anyone. She's an elected official. So she can just give it to you cut and dry. You know, that's essentially what she did. She told the mother what the form was used for. You know, and I'm glad that she did that.
Yeah, well, but you see, here's the problem. Why isn't that against the law?
Yeah, it is. It is against the law.
Oh, yeah, but for whose law? Judge Roy Bean?
Well, the thing is, Michael, you know, based on the way they're doing things down there, I think it's becoming common knowledge that folks in North Carolina, as far as the justice system is concerned, you know, they do things a whole lot different than other places around this country.
Holy cow. I have never, ever heard anything so outlandish in my entire life. I mean, I've been living down here now since 93. This is just unbelievable. This is just unbelievable. It is just unbelievable.
Well, it should be. I mean, that's a far term from them that they like to throw around, but it should be un-American, because it literally is.
I mean, how do you take?
Well, here's the thing. He was saying earlier about this case now proceeding up the line. What is the time window look like to push it all the way up into, the highest courts?
Well, the thing is, she filed the appeal with the North Carolina State Appellate Court about 3 weeks ago, and she just got a letter in the mail today, although it wasn't an actual ruling from that three-judge panel. I suspect that once she, submits it, first of all, she has to make certain that the guidelines for the Supreme Court that she can find an avenue for which to even present it. Because if there isn't any laws or violations that she can show, that's compelling, they may not even hear it. I mean, they can just decide that we don't want to hear it. But I would have suspected it's probably, about a month or so, could be 2 months, could be 3 months, before you get a decision from the state's highest court down there.
But this is the problem we just had. We just a form rejection letter with no explanation cited. How do you know how to proceed? I mean, it makes it simple like
I've never seen anything like that, Thomas. And again, that just illustrates how, in North Carolina, at least, it seems that they're doing things a lot differently than the standard around the country. Because I've never heard of an appellate court making a ruling without an actual written order. And I implored Beth Crude today to go back to that court and try to solicit that decision. I mean, it has to exist. I mean, because how does the clerk of courts know? How does the clerk of courts know that, what the three-panel judge of the appellate body said? What was their ruling? How does the clerk of courts know? Did someone just come out and tell her that? There's got to be some paperwork generated to even prompt the clerk of courts to send this woman this communication.
Exactly.
And another question I had to ask her, how come she don't have a lawyer of her own?
Well, I mean, they're depleted. I mean, their family funds are depleted. I mean, they please, they put everything in one basket, you know. They paid Mike Klinkenson $50,000. That's a lot of money to some folks, Michael. Of course, they're not like you and our good friend Thomas. You know, but $50,000 is a lot of money, buddy.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Oh, my word. This is just a nightmare. It really is. And, you know, every time it seems like we have a ray of hope, you know, with, you know, let's file here, let's do this or do that, it just goes sideways somehow. I don't even, again, you know, even if you want to prosecute this guy or whatever, just either prosecute or let him go while you build the evidence and case against him. I don't get any of this.
Yeah. Shannon, we're going to have to just keep working Shannon's case, and hopefully we can get something into the Supreme Court or one of these other entities, whether it's one of these universities that's shown interest in it or some national media outlet gets a hold of it and puts him on the national stage. Until then, it's just a waiting game. But why have you guys on the line, Michael? I did want to briefly talk about the young girl's case out of Washington, D.C., the 8-year-old child that's been missing since late February.
Right.
Yeah, I think you and I talked about that a little bit earlier today. The latest news on that now, the investigation is shifting now from the guy who was believed to have had her. It's now shifting to the mother and her boyfriend, the little girl's stepfather. Channel 9 in D.C. Just published that there are some very strange and disturbing images that were posted on Facebook just a couple of days after the young girl, they discovered that the young girl was missing. The stepfather is posted pictures of himself holding wads of cash, stacks of $50 bills, and these expensive Air Jordan tennis shoes for the little girl's little brothers. But these folks were living in a homeless shelter. You know, so, and, you know, there's been rumors, speculation that this child may have been sold to some kind of, child or human trafficking ring. Okay, so that's a very disturbing story up in D.C., and I would be remiss if not, you know, mentioning, you know, this young girl's case on the air today.
I want to go on about that, going a little deeper. Can you hold on, David?
Sure.
David? I want you up there.
Sure.
We have another call here to get to because you've got a few minutes. Hello there.
Who's this? Hi, Mike. It's Matt. Matt Newton.
Hi, boy, Matt. How are you? Matt Newton running for the vacated seat of State Senator Malcolm Graham. That's District 40. So tell us, Matt, what's going on?
Oh, not much. Things are going great. Campaigning like crazy and shaking a lot of hands. Burning a lot of shoe leather, and we'll be getting signs out soon. So chugging right along.
What's the issue that is in the forefront with you?
Oh, geez, there's so many. Certainly, we've been discussing education. We've been discussing health care and jobs, issues with our employment laws, the earned income tax credit being eliminated. The most regressive tax reform in 40 years being passed last year, balancing the budget on the backs of the middle class, voter ID, where do I start? Racial Justice Act, where do I start? There's so much going on, and every particular issue impacts the others. And so we really need to have a collective effort to win back the legislature and bring back the laws that we've held so dear as Democrats over the past 100 years plus, rectify this the regression that we're seeing.
Well, you know, the thing is that what I need to ask you, and give me an honest answer, how are you going to tackle when you get in to the state legislature? And it's been the history of voters across the country that in a year, which we call the off-year election, when the president doesn't run, less than half the voters turn out. if less than half the voters turn out in this year election, in this particular state, there will be nothing left for them not to kill. We might as well be back in 1840. Slavery was rampant. Nobody could vote but those that owned property. And that is just not going to be here. It's just going to be worse here since we write voting legislature as far as laws they have put in office in the last 6 months. But this is going to be rapid all over the country. And what are you saying to women when this is going to affect women more than it's going to affect men?
Yeah, well, we're certainly the petri dish for organizations like ALEC, the Koch brothers, Art Pope. And they are using North Carolina as the launching off point. And we need to fight to prevent that from happening. And certainly there are issues that affect women in particular, like Equal Pay and the Family Leave Act, that are not being appropriately addressed. There are a number of issues on the peripheral that even within the supermajority in Raleigh, we can work together in a bipartisan effort to accomplish. Stiffer domestic violence laws is an example. The Citizens Review Board effort that we're taking to Raleigh is another example, one where we focused a lot on transparency and were able to bring libertarians on board to pass it. Something that, you know, I wrote and we passed unanimously amongst both Republicans and Democrats. We're seeing a lot of the polls shift against the Republican legislature on the issue of unemployment insurance. That's becoming an issue that moderate Republicans are supporting. And to think that we're going to continue to have this rollback from 26 to 20 weeks, $180 off the cap of unemployment insurance without people being further upset over the next year or two, I think
$180, they would be owing. How are you going to take $180?
I lost you, Mike.
The people might as well pay the government, not pay them.
Mm-hmm.
Am I losing you?
Yeah. No, I'm still here. Yeah. Those are issues that we can accomplish even in the current legislature, so long as we have a representative that is cognizant of them and is willing to bring them up. And it doesn't end there. But we certainly need to also work within the party to assure that we win back seats. The most important year for us coming up, as important as 2014 is, as important as 2016 is, the most important year is going to be 2018 when we start talking about the redistricting debate. And we start working towards un-gerrymandering our gerrymandered districts.
Okay, that's all fine, Matt, but the thing that I'm worried about right now, if we don't get women to turn out, kiss it goodbye. I mean, it's up to women.
Yeah, it's all about turnout.
If we're women, this election now and 2016 is about women. If women do not care enough to take up the mantle to fight for their rights, then they deserve everything they get. The problem is they're going to make every other woman deserve everything that they don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the problem here. Women need to turn out. Why do women vote against their own self-interest? Why is that? Matt, I'm losing you.
Oh, no, I'm still here. Yeah. You know, we have a lot of voters vote against their own self-interest. And we've seen there is absolutely no reason whatsoever that the state of North Carolina should currently have a Republican governor. And the veto that we had in our back pocket is really, it's always been extremely, you know, that last line of defense, and now we don't even have that. I agree with you. I would take it one step further. I would say it's also Democrats and independents who need to take notice of what's happened over the last 2 years and not let the legislators that have allowed this to occur get away with it. I would not be surprised if over the next 2 years we don't start to see a supermajority in Raleigh that starts to become a little bit more moderate leading into the gubernatorial race of 2016 and start to try to get all voters, right, women, Democrats, independents, Republicans alike, try to get all voters complacent and help them forget about the last 2 years. And we need to, all voters need to be very vigilant and go out and ensure that they are voting in their best self-interest.
Are you telling me that this regressive party is going to get more moderate by 2016? What would be the purpose of that?
The purpose of becoming more moderate? To hold power.
The whole power?
So like,
mm-hmm.
Why would anybody believe us? Trouble understanding what you're saying, Matt, because it's in the
You can't. Over the last 2 years, I don't think that we could pinpoint a more regressive legislature across the entire country than what we face here in North Carolina, right? And it's simply a matter of catering to special interests and big business. You know, we talked about ALEC. You can point to Duke Energy. The list goes on and on. And at the expense, right, the expense of the common citizen. And they've done it, you know, roughshod, right? I mean, there are no excuses here. It's not as though there are readily available explanations for why they have declared war on teachers and the public education system. There aren't answers for why we're not getting free Medicaid expansion, right? There are no answers for why we are going to violate the constitutional rights of hundreds of thousands, if not a million, North Carolinians under the voter ID laws that are that have been passed. There's no explanation. There's no excuse for it. And let's face it. In my opinion, the folks that enacted this legislation or these legislative reforms are aware of that, and they know that they aren't popular. And so I would not be surprised, especially within our current governor's administration, I would not be surprised if they make a concerted effort to try to appear moderate. And we've already heard the governor say that he's on board with raising teacher salaries. We as Democrats can use that as leverage. But having said that, I would not be surprised if we don't see a slight shift to more of a moderate stance to try to get people, voters, for the next gubernatorial election, try to make them a little complacent, help them forget so that they go back and they do it all over again and vote against their self-interest. Now, we as Democrats have to be extremely vigilant and stand firm and keep reminding everybody of just how bad it is and say we can't let that happen. We need to get folks who will be much more responsive to the people and folks that will make the right decisions and overturn some of this regressiveness in the future. Certainly it can start now, right? It can start in 2014, but we also need to continue that and be in a position in 2018, without a doubt, to ensure that what happened right back in 2008 and 2010 doesn't happen again.
Well, I want to thank you, Matt. Where can people get a hold of you, send some money, ask for help? How can they get a hold of you?
I have my website, votematnewton.com, is one way, votematnewton.com. And folks can also jump on Facebook and keep up with the campaign, Matt Newton, and that's Matt, M-A-T-T, Newton, N-E-W-T-O-N, 4, and that's spelled out, F-O-R, North Carolina's NC, NC Senate 40. Matt Newton, 4, NC Senate 40. Jump on there and give me a like. You can go on the Facebook page, put the donate button, and we also have contact links. And so anyone can contact the campaign through the website and through Facebook.
Okay, let me ask you a question. While you're still there, David, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I want to ask you, Matt, one thing before you go about the Shannon Modi case. The mother has just received a letter back or some notification back that the appellate court did not hear her case. Is that what it is, David?
No, actually, it was saying that it was denied. The fact that they stated it or ordered it that in that manner suggested they did hear it or they did consider it, but it was denied. And it wasn't an actual ruling that you would typically see from such a court body. It was simply a letter from a clerk of courts indicating that the court had denied the habeas.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to ask you, Matt. I don't know if you know or not. What's the order of procedure with that when a court denies a habeas?
It's my understanding that that's within the discretion of the court, and they have the opportunity to pick and choose. They prioritize importance. Having said that, I'm not as familiar with the specifics of the case to be able to really comment in a more educated fashion on that, Mike, and I apologize.
Okay.
I understand the injustice of it all, especially – I'm sorry.
Well, what you're saying is then the court does not have to give an explanation of why they didn't hear them.
Under habeas corpus, I don't believe so.
Ah, okay. All right. So now, can she push forward to the state Supreme Court without just because you have to? Is that a reason why she can go to the Supreme Court now because she was was turned down, I should say?
I don't know, and I wish I had an answer for you, Mike. We specialize in district and superior, and I could look into it and get back to you, but I don't want to give you the wrong answer. She might be able to appeal the habeas corpus, but I don't believe that's how it works. I think once it's denied, you don't have the opportunity to appeal the denial.
Okay. But we don't know if it was even heard by them, right? Because don't they have to pick and choose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm assuming that it wasn't. I'm assuming that they saw the general factual background and decided to not review it, which is, you know, I'm disappointed to hear that.
Well, if they didn't even look at that, is that possible? They didn't even look at it.
Anything's possible.
Yeah. Okay.
So
all right. Well,
we've seen a lot of things happen that we didn't anticipate, right? And things that didn't make sense. So I don't know. It's possible.
Right. Okay. All righty. Thank you, Matt Newton. Matt Newton runs for District 40. State House of Flat. And give us a call back next week, Matt. Tell us where you're at.
Okay, you got it, Mike. Thank you.
No problem. Bye-bye. Okay, David. That might answer that, but he's going to look into it. We'll find out next week.
What I wanted to say, Michael, was that it has to. You can appeal a habeas corpus all the way to the state Supreme Court. You can even appeal a habeas all the way to the U.S. District Court, and that's listed in the North Carolina General Statutes because I read it. okay? I know for a fact, and this is the reason, this is the course that we took once we got those two denials from Superior Court Judges Hobgood and Johnson. North Carolina state statute says that you have the right. It's just that once you go to the next level, each level has criteria for them to even hear it. Now, the reason why she was able to take it to the appellate court is because the rulings from both of those judges were frivolous. They stated that she didn't have legal standing to even file a legal document on her son's behalf because she wasn't an attorney or a party to the case. But clearly, North Carolina General Statute 17-5 says that even the person for whom the relief is sought for can file a habeas or anyone else on their behalf. So, you know, that was frivolous, and that was a ground for her to go to the appellate court. Now, I suggest, I believe the fact that there was no written, she was never given a written order or ruling from the appellate court, that's going to be grounds for her to go to the Supreme Court. But it is written in North Carolina, I can't cite the statute, but it is in North Carolina General Statutes because I read it myself.
Okay, very good. That answers that. All right, so give us let's go back to what we were talking about, and that was with the child that's missing down there in Washington, or was it Maryland?
She was a little girl. The young girl's name is Relisha Rudd. Her family was staying in a homeless shelter in the Washington, D.C. area. And somehow a man by the name of Khalil Tatum, who was actually a janitor working at that particular facility, befriended the family, was given, the kids at the shelter gifts and things of that nature. And somehow came up where it was discussed that he had a granddaughter around her age, and she was allowed to go with him on several occasions to go to functions with his granddaughter or something to that effect. I'm not quite clear on those details, but the little girl was known to have been allowed to go with this man, a 51-year-old janitor, who the family, according to news reports, didn't really know him. Okay. Now, the strange part is that he left or apparently went with her on February 26th of 2014, and the last time she was saw was on March 1st. However, the little girl hadn't been in school almost a month. And so when school officials, school counselors became aware of that, they, started calling and making, inquiries. They even went out to the homeless shelter where the family was staying. And they, after that particular encounter, that prompted them to call the cops. Right. Now, had the school not gotten involved, no one would have reported this child missing. Not the father, the stepfather, the mother, the grandmother, or anyone. So it's a very bizarre case. Now this man, they've been looking for him for a week or so, saying that he was, his pictures are all over the news, saying that he actually had the little girl and was seen as an abductor. And then I think when they tracked down where he was standing at a Red Roof Motel in Prince George's County, Montgomery County, actually, they found his wife dead inside the hotel. Okay, so they were looking for her. I mean, they were looking for him in connection with that. They believed that he was responsible for that. And so they got some kind of leads for Kenilworth Park, which is in Southeast D.C., for them to go and check that. They checked it initially. They didn't find anything. And then all of a sudden, they got tips to tell them to go back there. And they go back there, then they find his body there. Said that he was, had committed suicide. This is a really, really bizarre case, okay? And I just found out last night that the mother and the sister, as well as Lou, the sister of the mother and the grandmother, all have been working to, cover up or hide the fact that Relisha was with this man through the school system. When they called them, the grandmother gave the school Tatum's number and said that she was sick, and he acted as her doctor. Now, this is all in news reports and police reports. So the mother, the sister, and the grandmother all definitely know something about what's going on with this little girl. Okay. The fact that his wife is now dead and he's now dead doesn't necessarily mean that he was some pedophile who smashed this girl and killed his wife, you know, after she found out about it and then killed himself. There's something else going on, you know. You know, even today they're making reports that the stepfather, days after Alicia was found missing or went missing, he was on Facebook. He posted pictures of himself on Facebook. Why is the $50 bills and these expensive Air Jordan tennis shoes for the younger boys, for the mother's younger boys? So it's a really bizarre case. They're also saying that they're looking, they're checking the train station video to see if the little girl was put on a train set to some unknown location. You know, because reports earlier said that someone did drop him off at the train station. So it's just really, really bizarre down there right now. And this is an 8-year-old little girl that we're praying is still alive. And unfortunately, the only person who could really best tell us, you know, where she is, the last time she was seen, is Khalil Tatum. And unfortunately, he's deceased.
And do they know how this was done? Did he tie hop down someone mug him?
Say that again, Michael.
Anything.
Say that again.
How do we know, was he killed or suicide or what?
Well, they say suicide, but the details in terms of suicide, of what manner of suicide, has not been revealed.
Right.
And they found him in a park.
Yeah, in a park.
They found him in a park.
Where they got a tip to look.
Yeah, they actually have, somehow they were able to discover that Tatum had purchased a shovel, a large box of industrial-sized trash bags, and lime, okay? And his vehicle was seen at this park for several hours, okay? And that's when the cops began a report that they believe it's going to be a recovery case and not a missing persons case because they believe that he may have already killed her. When they searched the park, they didn't find a little girl or they didn't find anything. And then they got a call to go back there. The area where they found him, they had already searched it and they didn't find anything prior to that. So that tells me one thing. Whoever gave them information as to going back there, they know something, okay? And the fact that they went there the first time and he wasn't there, or the little girl wasn't there, and then they get a tip to go back there, you know, that's kind of suggested perhaps he was killed and dumped there.
Yeah, right.
That's so bizarre.
I mean,
by the way, congratulations on finding the most bizarre cases I've ever heard in my life. But, all you need to do is write these up and have a TV show. No, this is, and let me just get one part straight. The family are the ones that are blocking the information about the janitor, and the family, the father in the family, is the one that's been showing up with money. Is that correct?
Right. This is correct. D.C. police reported today that they're actually, a grand jury has been convened to try to look into filing obstruction of justice charges against the mother, because she, when the social workers found out that that they had given Alicia to Tatum, and they wanted to sound the alarm, sound the Amber Alert, the mother tried to stall them. Okay, and then there were other false statements that she gave. So they're looking. The investigation has shifted now onto the parents. Okay, so yeah, they have been hindering the investigation all along. And then yeah, a couple of days after the cops got became aware of her disappearance, he was seen posting the money on Facebook and the pictures of the expensive tennis shoes for the other little children.
Right.
I mean, this is just...
It's an 8-year-old little girl. So, I mean, there's probably very little chance of her being alive now. And like I said, if we can call the police now, they might have even further details or leads they were given. But anyway, what a tragedy. But how bizarre is this with all the family and the janitor and stuff. That's just, ugh.
Yeah, but here's another thing that my most recent article on my blog, The People's Champion, .me, I have posed the question, wondering if this child is actually the biological daughter of Kalia Tatum. Okay, if you go to that blog, there's an images of both of them side by side. This little girl looks remarkably like this man. She looks like he spit her out.
God.
Okay.
Hmm.
The resemblance is just uncanny.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, but when that came out, then why would they go through the whole rigmarole of, you know, killing everybody and killing the girl? Why wouldn't he just say, okay, you know, I had an affair, that's really my daughter or something? That seems, I mean, as being a parent, I would do anything not to kill my child, is my point. That just seems kind of...
Well, one of the files, I was reading through some of the blogs, somebody posed a very good point. The fact that nobody, not the child's stepfather, or the child's mother, the child's aunt, which would be the mother's sister, or the grandmother, had contacted DCF or the police or anybody regarding this child's whereabouts. When the school found out the little girl hadn't been there like in almost 30 days, they started to make calls. Apparently, the grandmother gave the school counselor Tatum's number and said that was his doctor and the little girl was sick. Okay, so right there, they were trying to cover up something about the child's whereabouts. All right, and then when they went by the house to speak with them, whatever the story was that they gave him, it didn't gel right, and they notified the police. Now, saying after saying that, my thing is, had not that school official, that counselor, notified the cops, no one in the family was gonna call anybody and let them know that Tatum had this little girl. Okay, so it could be a situation where possibly this little girl may be, you know, being held as collateral for something. Okay?
Yeah.
It's way out there in left field, but it's got to be some rationalization why the family didn't notify anybody in almost a month that this man had this little girl. I mean, they weren't concerned that he had her. And then when the cops and everybody got involved, they started to try to stall him and trying to cover up stuff. So they definitely know something. You know, it could very well be that the little girl was dead, you know, or they know what happened to her, you know. And then there's video out. Thomas, you go online, you Google it. There's video out when the last time the little girl was saw, which was March 1st, she was walking down a hallway of a red roof motel with Tatum. Okay, and if you look at that, the little girl just seems too comfortable with this man. You know,
right.
I mean, it looked like son and daughter. I mean, father and daughter. That's what it looked like to me. You know, and that's what prompted me to take a look at their images. And I tell you, once you look at it, you're going to say, wow, this kid looks just like this guy.
But then, I mean, again, so that's a very, I mean, scenario. But then, I mean, and that would also and everything else. But what did we get? To the point of the murdering that makes sense.
And what's with the money?
What with the money?
I mean, you know, hey, in every case, if there's money involved, follow the money.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the story with this money?
Yeah, that's very interesting, and the cops are all over that because they're standing in a homeless shelter. Okay, they were standing in a homeless shelter, and a couple of days after, you know, he comes up with all this cash, you know, these expensive Air Jordan tennis shoes for the little kids. You know, it just doesn't add up, man. It's just something really, really shaky about this whole thing. And I believe the mother, along with the stepfather and the grandmother, know more than what they told cops. And I think that we're going to find that all of them are going to be charged with the crime. Because I don't know why the grandmother would give the school counselor Tatum's number and say that he was a doctor. This guy's not a doctor. He's a janitor. His school has an extensive criminal record. So, you know, it's just a really scary case. We're all praying for this little girl and her safe return, man.
Did he have a criminal record?
Yes, he had an extensive criminal record.
Well, this is the thing from the Black and Missing National Foundation or whatever. They say that they think she's in a network of these predators and stuff. But is there any? I haven't seen any reason as to why are they just guessing, or is there some kind of evidence that she was taken, just the money?
Yeah, well, was the father involved with this network or any network like that?
Well, Dust, you know, when these kind of unfortunate stories come about, these are some of the things that you don't really have any leads. You know, people just start talking about these kinds of things because it's a possibility. You know, it's definitely a possibility. I personally think the little girl's alive, and I think that there are people out there who knows where she is, and I think that someone has her. Okay, and like I said, I believe the little girl may be held as collateral for something. I think it's far-fetched to say that she was put into a network, you know, or something. I mean, they don't have anything on Tatum that would suggest that he was involved in anything like that, you know. And then the mother's comments on one of the interviews that really struck me strangely. She said that her mother had told her that Tatum expressed that if anything happened to him and his wife, that the little girl would be set. Okay, now, to me, when you say something like that, it kind of, you know, infers that you got, you know, somebody's made some kind of financial, prearranged financial arrangements for somebody, you know, where the little girl would have been a benefactor, okay? And so that's what got me questioning his true relationship to this child. Why would a janitor who just simply met a family at a D.C. shelter, you know, make some kind of financial arrangements for the little girl? It just doesn't add up.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Could you say that again? Because we lost you. It must be some kind of bad storms out here because we're having that problem all day.
So you're saying that the janitor had told them that the little girl would be set if anything happened to him and his wife?
Exactly.
Exactly.
So exactly, Thomas.
And void if he suicides, and that's what apparently happened.
Unless it wasn't by the insurance company.
No. You know, what I really picked up from it was like a foreshadow. He knew something was coming down the pipe because him and his wife both are dead now.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay?
And
it was like a foreshadow.
Very odd to me that you have tips, and all the tips lead to the suspects, and all the suspects are dead.
Yeah.
I mean, you get one tip and you find the wife in the hotel, and then you get another tip and you find the guy in the park. That is beyond belief. I mean, that right there alone says.
Hey, they got a ship in Shannon Namodi's case, and he's gone. He's off the face of the earth. We don't know where he's at. No one can see him.
But it's like an episode of one of those things where, you know, you set up the perfect stooge, fall
right.
guy, whatever. You set up the janitor,
right.
and then you kill him, and the police call is in, so that they can answer the question, you know, or whatever. And then it's just an unsolved mystery, and the killer walks away. That type thing. You know what I mean?
Hmm. Yeah, well, there's something really going on with that case. There's something really, really going on with it. And I'm very disturbed by this woman's complete detachment from, you know, the grasping the reality of, you know, she didn't really care about the overall well-being of her daughter. You know, because the journalist who was interviewing her, some of the clips that I saw, he posed a question to her. Well, some people are saying that you refused to file a missing persons report. And she said, her response was, no, that's not true. They never asked me to file a missing persons report.
Oh.
And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, come on. A couple of years ago, they had the missing child thing that ended up, the parents ended up killing them or whatever, but you knew something was wrong from the get-go because every time they were interviewing them, they weren't out looking. You know, they never went on any of the searches. They never did anything. I mean, that's a dead giveaway. If you were a parent, you couldn't sleep. You couldn't eat. You would be scouring the earth for your child. You would be reporting to every agency.
Absolutely.
You know, so give me a break.
Hey, please. Well, my daughter's dog, who was my first grandson, my daughter's dog, when he got off the leash before she was married with one of her boyfriends was walking him, he was 8 months old or seven months old, like 6 months old, something like that. I was out looking. I put out signs on the internet. I posted. So you remember that?
Yeah, no.
I posted. We looked for 2 weeks? A week. 7 days. and it was beautiful. It was a summertime, beautiful weather for seven straight days, and people were calling us with leads. We saw them, and we couldn't find them, and we looked for some, and then it was going to pour rain this last day, and we said, we got to find them because it's going to be pouring rain, it's going to get cold, and we said, 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We went to this one place and someone said he saw him. We looked around. He was just about to leave, and there he was sitting in the yard playing with another dog.
Yep. Yep.
So, I mean, I did this for a dog.
I know, right? And so when you hear about parents,
I mean, I was up till 10 o'clock every night. What, at night looking for this dog?
Because we walk around with flashlights.
Yeah. That's right. We were out there with Thomas and I. We're in the woods looking for this dog. Yeah. Please, you kidding?
So, I mean, look, this is what you know parents who are, I mean, these parents are literally getting charged with obstruction of justice. Then they're involved. There's something not natural going on here. But so
yeah,
I mean,
they're clearly involved, Thomas. They're clearly involved because the other part of the interview, the mother said that when he said that, why would people question why she would give her daughter, her 8-year-old daughter, to a 51-year-old man? And she said, well, see, I want to correct that because the public don't know I did not give this man my daughter. You know, and he says, well, you know, what people ask, when was it that you became, you know, under the impression that your daughter was missing? And she said, I was never under the impression that my daughter was missing because I dropped her off at my sister's house, who was under my mother's care, and I thought that my mother, I could trust my mother and my sister. Okay, and then he asked the question another way, and people said, well, why didn't you call the cops when Felicia went missing? Then the mother says, well, I didn't call the police because I didn't want to lose my other two children. You see what I'm saying? So she doesn't even have the capacity to understand what she's saying. In one breath, she's saying that she didn't know that her daughter was missing, and that she had given her daughter to her mother and didn't give them to the guy. But then when he asked the question a different way, she says the reason why she didn't call the cops, indicating that she knew her daughter was missing, okay, is because she didn't want to lose her other two children.
Yeah. So, as I say, you know, I didn't search for my missing child because I'm such a good parent, I didn't want to leave my other children. Okay, whatever. Look, this is horrific. My question is, since you cover these things and you've been following this longer than I have, is there any indications that it's related to other missing persons or whatever? Because when I keep hearing, you know, that these national networks think that they're involved in human trafficking, have you linked it to anything? Have you heard anything about it?
Well, actually, Thomas, that you know, human trafficking is obviously a very booming business because almost every time that you have some type of missing persons case or missing child's case that comes up anywhere in the country now, that's always a possibility. Now, they haven't promoted or put anything out, whether it's the cops or the media, indicating that, you know, this guy was associated with something like that or children in that immediate area disappearing. Okay, that they've never found, you know, that would tie it to that. So I don't even know why that they're even making that connection unless there's something under, you know, in the backdrop that they haven't disclosed publicly about it yet. But so far, yeah, the cops nor the media has put anything out that would connect those two.
Okay. See, I was wondering if it was something to do with this guy, the janitor guy, or this place. They said they've been living in the shelter for a year and a half or whatever, two and a half years. It seems like maybe that was the reason. You know, maybe there's some other missing people from this shelter or something.
Well, yeah, here's the other thing now. So the janitor, he didn't have a house or apartment either. He was living in a hotel?
Well, apparently, no, because they've searched his residence. Okay, they searched his residence. They have searched his residence because they found children's clothing, and they found, I think, $90 in cash or something like that, and a picture of the little girl at his home.
Okay,
so, yeah, they were – apparently they were doing the hotel – I don't know what they were into, what they were doing. Because the scene – say again?
Well, why is it – the last time we see him and her together, he's walking into a Red Roof Inn or something.
Well, the story that was just broke today, the parents, well, actually broke last night on HLN, on Jane Velez Mitchell's show. The grandmother was on there, and she said that they were told that Relisha was taken to a pool party at that hotel. And when they saw Relisha and him walking down the hallway, the little bags and stuff that he had was bathing clothing that he had bought for her, okay, and everything. And that's what the grandmother says, you know. But there were other police reports, Michael, that indicate that the day that they found the wife, the guy's wife, there were three other people who were in that apartment, I mean that hotel room, the day before, the night before. And one of the guys came back and said that Tatum was there with, he saw the wife laying across the bed, okay, and he wouldn't let him in. And so kind of like putting Tatum there with the dead body, okay?
Repeat that because we broke up again. Okay, repeat.
Okay. Now, what I'm saying is that there were three other people who were reportedly at the hotel with Tatum, okay, with one hotel where his wife was discovered, all right? One of the guys went back and saw Tatum in a doorway and saw his wife spread across the bed. Tatum wouldn't let him in the room. So when the cops came back there, that's how they found the body spread across the room. But that could have only been done to just place Tatum at the scene. And that's how cops named him as the chief suspect in her murder. Okay, but those three people that the cops said were there, they're now looking for him. They're all people they're all suspects. The cops are all looking for him. Their pictures are all over the place now.
Okay, so now is this the same red?
No, that's a different hotel altogether. Two different hotels.
So now we got two hotels involved, and we have a house where they live, a home or a park. Is this a private home or is it a park? No, they're living in a hotel. It's got the janitor. I mean, living in a house, right?
Yeah, because they searched his home. They searched his residence. Him and his wife, they've been married, 30 years, 28 years, something like that? They were living in their own home. They were doing something in the hotel rooms. And something else that the mother said, the grandmother said last night on Jane Velez Mitchell's show, she said that she believed that the mother, that Tatum's wife, walked in on something. Okay, something, and that's why she was killed. And I think that's very strange for her to be, you know, sort of involved in this, for her to make that kind of statement. You know, it may have some credibility, because what does she know?
Yes. Yeah, so that would kind of make sense. So he was maybe in the...
Yeah, but why would they...
He's the witness, or he's the link.
Maybe he's involved with him.
Right.
Why did you disappear?
Maybe they killed him to keep him from talking. Because maybe he's involved in the ring. The wife,
what kind of ring?
Stumbles into it, you know.
What kind of
child molesting ring or something? I don't know. Some kind of national thing. Maybe they use hotels or something. I don't know. I mean, it's just a weird freaking thing. But yeah, I'm looking on this article. So it says that the grand jury is now thinking about charging the mother, whose name is Young. Because she's actively blocked the investigation.
This is the grandmother.
The mother.
No, Shamika Young. That's the daughter. That's the mother. That's the mother of Relisha. That's the missing girl's mother.
Says that not only did she not report her, and then not only did she also try to block their investigation, but looking back now, they found out that she went to the school and gave the school permission for Khalil Tatum to check her out in time and lied to them and told him that he was her personal doctor.
Right.
Yeah, wait a minute. How could the school not know? Oh, okay. So he was the janitor at the shelter.
Yes.
And he posed as her doctor.
But she told them that and signed permission slips for him to take her out whenever.
She gave the guy permission, Mike, to go to the school and pick the little girl up. Whatever.
Well, why would a doctor want to pick up a little girl from school?
I mean, the school was...
I mean, she wouldn't even have to say that.
However it's happened. But she did. They said she went to school, gave the school permission for Tatum to check the girl out and everything as a doctor. So, I mean, that's why she'd be in charge. But here's one thing I want to point out, since we have these two cases juxtaposed. Here's a black family involved in something tragic and something obviously criminal. She's already about to be charged, right? And we got this other kid sitting in a jail cell for a year and a half.
2 years.
And we can't even, and the mom's getting beat up on the side of the road and the car's towed two counties away, and we can't even get, a hearing or anything. Do you sense the disparity in justice going on here?
It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. The very fact that this, you pose a great analogy there, Thomas. You know, just the very thought of this mother walking around free is sickening. You give your kid to this guy.
That's the difference in two types of mothers too. You've got this one mother who is selling her child and doing whatever and blocking investigations, and then you got the other mother. Everywhere, humanly raising money, doing every radio stations, everything else to try to free her.
As I said, Battlestar Galactica, this is fracking crazy.
Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
All right. David, what other witness do you have for us?
I don't have anything else right now, Michael, but I'm always on the case. I'm quite sure I'll be looking forward to joining you guys next week on your new segment. I'll keep you posted.
I thank you very much.
I used to think that you were going to always be in our legal and justice section, but now I'm going to move you to the weird.
It's the people's files. Yeah, well, you'll have your own theme song next week. This is the people's files. Oh, good idea. I got this all for you. All right, David. David, give us your website.
It's thepeopleschampion.me. That's thepeopleschampion.m as in Mary, E as in Edward.
All right, David.
Thank you so much.
David Adams, the People's Choice.
All right, Michael. Michael and Thomas, it's always a pleasure.
Okay. The People's Choice for the People's Champion is David Adams.
We had elected officials like that, man.
Well, that's you hold your breath for that. Okay. All right, David. Talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Thank you.
I had this earlier today. Somebody was talking about plagiarism online. They said when you steal an idea from one author, it's plagiarism. But when you steal a bunch of ideas from all over the place, it's just research. Right?
Ron Paul.
Well, I counted that, and I said that's kind of like in our real life, system of government here. When you steal from one person, it's a crime. But when you steal from everybody, it's politics.
Let's see here. But anyway.
Well, kind of crazy. But, hey, you know what? Anybody listening, if y'all have any news or anything, if you've seen, heard, or think you have anything about this Relisha Rudd, please contact the Washington, D.C. Police Department or the FBI because they need help. Girl's still missing.
You think?
But, man, what a effed up story that was. I'm telling you.
Unbelievable. All right. Well, hey.
We got to cleanse the palate, Mike.
A little bit of apple pie does it all the time.
Apple pie to wash
the listen, well, I went into, and I need to get us back into the storyline of where we are. There was a film called Class Action. Now, I don't know if you people saw this film. This film, I think it was early 90s. It is a fabulous film, but it is so important. It makes a major connection out of the real-life headlines today. And Class Action was built on a real-life headline. I believe it was you said last week it was the comic with the explosions.
By the way, just yes. So it's 1991.
99. Wait, I'm right. I knew it.
Yeah, you okay. Made your stuff. David Spence movie.
Yep.
And
Gene Hackman, Mary Elizabeth, Mastriano, and Mr. Fishburne, Lawrence.
Michael Apted.
Yeah.
Directed.
Yep.
Let's see if it says what it's actually based on. It's based on that era because they had the huge involving the Pinto and everything else.
Right.
And the cover-ups. So this is kind of a fictionalized version of that.
Well, I want to give you a little taste of, because we're going to lead into the next segment, the storyline we're going to follow. Now, this is the story, how it is proposed and what the basic problem in the story is. Just listen. That's not the one I want to play.
What you're supposed to say is...
Yeah, that's not the end. See, I was looking for that
important movie to talk about.
The
Captain America. I'm
well,
saying,
I'm yeah, we're not there yet.
I
we're not yet because next
1991
week, next year we're going to get a piece on next year. Next week we're going to get a report from Mr. Gaff on Noah. He saw it today. And I won't give away any of the secrets that he told me on the air, but yes, he's writing up his storyline right now.
All right, I got to go see it this weekend.
So, no, this weekend I'm going to see Captain America.
That's what I said. We got to see Captain America.
Yeah, that's what we're going to see this weekend. So, anyway, the story is, I had the piece here all queued up, but evidently I don't have it queued up, and I can't find it. I had it here. I just don't know where it is. I've been looking for it.
So the point is...
Yes, go ahead.
It's in the news again because
what? Well,
we were talking about earlier. We're back into an era oversight and
right.
investigation.
Correct.
And now we're starting to investigate and hold accountable companies which are actively defrauding or endangering consumers.
Right. Now,
so we have all these things occurring like we have in the past couple of weeks with Toyota and now GM.
Yeah.
But that's why this great movie is back and you should watch it because it's the it really is that quintessential David versus Goliath, you know, small town, small person versus faceless corporation storyline. But it's all about companies trying to maximize profit and doing anything to save a few bucks at the expense of
to save even just a few bucks.
Yep.
Well, here's the storyline. This car company, the Meridian, not the Meridian. That was the car of the Meridian. The car company is Argo Motors. And what happens is that Argo Motors...
Point this out.
Yes.
This has nothing to do with reality. My personal take. Coming right out of the 80s.
Yes. Thank you.
Knowing the people. No. Coming right
yes.
out of the 80s.
Yes.
In the Reagan-Bush years.
Yes.
And knowing the people and the involvement of Hollywood.
Yes.
Now that we have had it declassified and turned into a recent movie.
Oh.
I wouldn't be surprised if people involved in this little sphere of things used the Argo name.
Hey.
Hey, you never know.
You never, ever, ever know.
But that is a different story.
Well, there was a... anyway, the story is that the people in this story, this Meridian is a car made by Argo Motors. And what happens is that the Meridian seemed to be having a problem when the left turn blinker was on. You were getting ready to make a left turn, and you were hitting the rear. The car would explode.
Mm-hmm.
Bingo.
It's a short that you didn't want to have.
So people are suing them. Gene Hackman is a mayor, major two-time, a great, great, great class action lawyer. His daughter's on the other side working for the client, which is Argo Motors, and she's defending them in court and against her father, which they had a little tech, you know, back and forth with for a long time. And they picked her to go against him because thought that he might be getting a little weak seeing his daughter.
Right.
Well, nada, ain't happening.
Yeah.
And he told his daughter, you know, hey, you might be good because I taught you, but you ain't that good. Not yet, anyway. So, all right. She starts doing investigations herself, and Argo, Mr. Fred Thompson, you know, Mr. Right and Wrong, Fred Thompson, who's the head of Argo Motors, said, this car has been checked by six words of the Sunday. Here's our check report. And it was also checked by Rowena. He said, who's Rowena? Rowena is a independent car corporation that checks out these things. Oh, yeah. Also paid by Argo Motors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Like we established for Rowena these reports that
right.
is used to cover our.
So she finds out that there is a letter about that this engineer to Argo Motors is saying, hey, this thing is a death bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a little bit of what she said, what was said.
So all this we've been doing some research on the Meridian. A car. He did extensive research on its electrical system. It was project 0243.
Zero. I'm no longer good with numbers.
Well, it was a 1985 model station wagon, and you said there were problems with it.
Charge.
Excuse me?
That's what I called it. The depth charge.
Depth charge, sir, is
You want to know about the circuits.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I saved that ass on that one.
Really? How?
Well, there was this guy. Hillbilly.
Hillbilly?
What's his name?
You mean Getchell? George Getchell?
That's the one. Getchell. That's the name.
He was your supervisor for 16 years.
Just testing. Did you know that? What's his name? Designed that circuit, and I was supposed to test it.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, Alexander Pavel, leave it alone. We've already tooled up for it on the assembly line. The circuit is okay. That's what he said. But I'm a scientist. I tested anyway on my own. You see, it was okay. Until I started hitting the car when the left turn signal was flashing. And then
blew up?
It blew up.
The Meridian blew up?
Yeah. You see, when there is an impact of metal on metal, in this area, the devices are maybe 50, 75 centimeters apart. Now, if there is an arc in the flow of the circuit, just as it's penetrating the electrical fuel pump, then the gas tank will blow up. It's just a simple chain reaction.
So what you're saying is that if the car is hit from the rear when the left turn signal is functioning, it just might blow up.
Correct.
The report, when you filed this report, did you give a copy to Getchell?
To the company.
May I see another copy?
No, the company has it, of course.
Company is everything.
Yep. Except my notes.
You do have notes?
Of course.
May I see those, please?
No.
No.
If you want my notes, you need to go to Iron Mountain.
Okay, so this is setting the stage of what we're going to talk about here. They had a report that said this engineer told the company, hey, you got a problem here. And they said, oh, it's already tooled up. We're going to take care of it. Don't worry about it. Now, this guy who designed this circuit, his name is Dr. Getchell. In the storyline, played by Fred Thompson. Trust me with your mortgage, Fred Thompson. Later on in the story, she finds out about this, Maggie Ward, and she finds out through a means that's very important in how we're going to present our storyline here. Listen.
The list of people that worked on the Meridian, wasn't there a Pavel on it?
Yeah, he was one of the research guys. Why?
No, it's just a weird thing in Getchell's file. A commendation letter to Getchell from Flannery, who was the CEO back then. Blah, 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 usual hype. And then it says, please accept my gratitude and my thanks for keeping Pavel and the Meridian issue in the family. And it's signed at the beginning of the 1985 model year.
So?
So? What issue?
What issue? That's the reason why she went out there to see Pavel the Bunny Man. Now, she is also now sitting the office because she now knows the storyline, and she tries to tell her boss, hey, you guys got to settle. No, we ain't settling. He said, this is what we're gonna, you're going to go on with this case. So she's in with the head of company, Fred Thompson, who's no longer the chief engineer. He's the head of the company. And this next question comes up.
Testing methodology was state of the art at the time, and that's what we went by.
Okay, George. We're through for today. You're still talking a little about the jury. Not that that would be difficult. Let's keep it simple.
What the hell? I've never seen that damn report.
Makes two of us.
May I ask a question, please?
Sure.
Why didn't you just change the blinker circuit? Just a question.
I told Flannery about the problem a month or so before he died. He called in his head bean counter.
What's a bean counter?
Risk management expert, right, George?
Yeah. So Flannery shows him the data and asks him how much it would cost to retrofit...
You mean recall?
Yeah, you got it. To retrofit 175,000 units. You multiply that times $300 a car, give or take, you're looking at right around $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
So the risk guy, he crunches the numbers some more. He figures out you have one of those fireball collisions about every 3,000 cars. That's 150 explosions.
Which is almost exactly as many plaintiffs as there are.
These guys know their numbers. So you multiply that times $200,000 per lawsuit. That's assuming everybody sues and wins. $30 million max. See? It's cheaper to deal with the lawsuits than it is to fix the blinker. It's what the bean counters call a Simple actuarial analysis.
Simple actuarial analysis.
That's that bean counting approach that gets us into trouble even today.
And now going to the story, we have GM.
There we have GM.
Recalling up to 6.1 million cars as of Monday.
Yeah, 1.6.
Well, no, it's 6.1 million. There's something after that
that
you don't have, I don't think.
So this is that. But here's the part. Here's this other article that perfectly echoed that movie. And here's the title of this Reuters article. GM didn't fix the deadly ignition switch because it would have cost up to $1 per car.
Hey, wait a minute. No. Here.
Are you bean counting?
Claire McCaskill, Democrat, head of the committee in the Senate, called the now new CEO, Mary Barra, to talk about this in front of her committee. And you got to remember, GM, 2007, was going to go bankrupt. They were going to go bankrupt because of maybe they were going to have a major lawsuit on their hands. So what they did was pleaded bankruptcy. They were reconfigured under the same name and came back because a corporation, unlike people, don't have to change the name, can go bankrupt, and everything that they know, even suits, are gone. This is what a corporation can do. But I thought a corporation was people, because a person can't do this.
And that, yeah. We talked about this earlier with the corporations and their ascendancy in the Supreme Court. When corporations do things, they're not accountable.
Not accountable.
They can do anything they want. But you know what? If they want to have all the rights of a person,
they need to have all the
accountability of a person.
Now, here's what Claire McCaskill said this week.
And a culture of cover-up that allowed an engineer at General Motors to lie under oath. Repeatedly lie under oath. It might have been the old GM that started sweeping this defect under the rug 10 years ago. But even under the new GM banner, the company waited 9 months to take action after being confronted with specific evidence of this egregious violation of public trust.
Jara was extremely disappointed in her. She just seems to be so reticent to put any opinion out there. And mine was just one of many questions. Now, the fact is we have the documents that GM actually turned over to the House investigators that say in 2005 they made this calculation that it was better to do nothing, and people died. And she's sitting there and saying, I can't really say anything, I don't know. But if you look at her resume, Joy, she has been with the company over 30 years, 33 years to be exact, and held very important positions. She should have known. She was involved with engineering. She was involved in safety. I don't buy it. I was extremely disappointed, to put it mildly.
And, you know, Senator, do you foresee any remedies in terms of law, in terms of legislation that could prevent this from happening in the future? I mean, more than 10 years gap between complaints of these problems and even reporting it as they're supposed to the federal agency. Is there anything legislatively that you foresee can be done to prevent this happening again?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, Eddie Markey has a very good bill that would say, that he wrote with Dick Blumenthal, I believe, that says that when there's a complaint about some car and it's sent to GM, they ought to be transparent and make it public so people can see. Right now they keep it secret. She didn't agree to do that voluntarily. She still opposes her, the manufacturers oppose the bill that I wrote that would say you can no longer lease out a car or loan a car out that's under recall. There are many things that we can do, but I have to say this, and I think that Chairman McCaskill brought it out. In the private sector, these tri-lawyers that dug in and found out the truth, they ought to be praised. Lawyers are vilified so much. That lawyer, on his own dime, found out what went wrong, and there will be justice in the courts, and we will do our best to change the laws. All right.
Now, what they...
Favorite things ever, transparency.
Transparency, why do you need transparency?
So many things. You know, my favorite transparency thing, they had a transparency law in Florida back in the 80s, 90s, called the Sunshine Act.
Oh, really?
And it was literally, you know, shine the light.
That's when they got the governor, and so the governor cheated
the
entire state.
People could see what happened, right? And then did you know that our wonderful Jed, as soon as he went in, his first act was to revoke the Sunshine Act, which, you know, these things do exactly what they say they do. They just let the public be aware. And awareness is everything. Like they said, why is it 10 years to even find out about this type of stuff? Well, you know, it should have been handled immediately. It should have been handled when the people started complaining and there were deaths and there were accidents instead of all this cover-up and this obfuscation for a decade.
Well, now, getting back to this, you know, now, the thing in the class action was that they didn't turn over a piece of paper. Okay, they hit it. And what did they hit it under? A mountain of paper. So, you know, they said, okay, he worked here 32 years, the engineer. Let's send him 32 years of paperwork, every note, every conference, every phone call he ever made. But Gene Hackman, being the old sly slick devil, said, I'm hiding something. Give me the money man. I'll find out what it is. But and now, in real life now, every single time you change a part, on a vehicle, even, it does not be a car, any part on anything that's serviceable that you buy, you have to, by law, change the part number.
Yep.
Guess what? GM did not change the part number. Because if they changed the part number, they would have to have admitted that there was a problem with the original part.
They just substituted it. Hope nobody knows.
So they just changed the part, gave it the same part number. But we thought this, and the guy that was in charge of the chief engineer is named Ray DiGiorgio, senior engineer. And I have a little bit on that. Listen to this.
Ray DiGiorgio.
Steve Maraggiara has been very careful on how she's answered this. She's facing quite a grilling from those senators today. And as you mentioned, the NBC News investigative unit has been digging into this story for the last month. Several parts of our reporting came up in yesterday's House hearing and today's Senate hearing. For one, Louisiana Congressman Steve Scalise brought up that document we talked about on the show yesterday, the internal sign-off form where the lead design engineer for the Chevy Cobalt apparently signed off on a change to the ignition switch in 2006. Now, that engineer, Ray DiGiorgio, still a current employee at GM, later testified in a civil lawsuit deposition last year that he knew nothing about that change. Now, Barra was asked about that point blank, why the change was made, why the part number was not changed, and the safety concern was not publicized, and why no recall was issued. Now, yesterday, she didn't directly answer the question, citing the ongoing investigation that GM has commissioned. Now, she reiterated that she hoped to find the answer answers to what happened. In today's Senate hearing, however, she did call the part change without changing the part number, quote, unacceptable. And again, we've reached out to Ray DiGiorgio for comment, but have not heard back. Andrea, we are still waiting to get some of these clear answers to the specifics, those technical specifications that senators are grilling Barra about right now. Exactly right, Andrea. In today's hearing, senators have continued to grill Barra. Claire McCaskill, as you mentioned, called this a culture of cover-up, and McCaskill brought up the story of Mark Hood. Now, he's that engineer hired by the family of Brooke Melton. She's the woman who died on her birthday in 2010 when a 2005 Chevy Cobalt crash. Now, Mark Hood, that engineer, he testified in the civil lawsuit last year that he essentially appears to have uncovered the complicated technical details of this ignition switch problem. Several weeks ago, the NBC News investigative unit first spoke with him, and he described how GM appeared to have changed the ignition switch part, that key part, in 2006 without telling anyone. And now his investigation, Mark Hood's analysis of the whole issue, has really become central to these congressional hearings, Andrea.
How about them, man?
So, you know.
And now we have our last bit here, Senator.
Basically, that was the lady going, did we change that? Oh, really?
Oh, really?
That was wrong.
That's unacceptable.
That won't happen again.
That'll beat your fracking butt.
Yeah.
It's unacceptable. That's what you tell a little child before you tell him to go into timeout. That's unacceptable. Now go in the corner and have a timeout.
Yeah, and what? And don't kill anyone else?
And don't kill anybody else. Now we have, and what they really didn't know was they got racked by the women on this Senate committee because I think all three of the women, Boxer, McCaskill, and who was the other one? Boxer, McCaskill, and I forgot the other one who questioned her, are all former U.S. attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
Now we also had the male U.S. attorney, Richard Blumenthal. He got into the act. Here's what he said.
At Cobalt Car, as driven now, safe for your daughters to drive, would you allow them behind the wheel?
I would allow my son and daughter to drive. Well, my son, because he has, is the only one eligible to drive, if he only had the ignition key.
She would not allow them to drive only if they use the ignition key.
Well,
I mean, this is the CEO of the company.
Yeah, good sales job.
Oh, I mean, yeah, let me run out and buy one of them. Just give me one key. Don't give me a trunk key. Just give me one key.
The problem was, of course, if you had any weight on the ignition, it disengages, turns the car and the safety features off, and you can't steer it.
It turns into the auxiliary.
What turns into? You're dead.
You're dead.
So,
you lose your brakes, you lose your airbags, you lose your power steering.
And spokesperson of the company, would you put your child in this car?
Well, my daughter is not old enough yet, but my son, only if you use the ignition key.
Yeah. Well, if you did,
are you kidding me?
Yeah, so it's just a faulty product, and they're still squirming. What is up with these companies?
As I said, it was 1.3 million at the beginning of the week. It's now 6.1.
Well, let me tell you this. The way they're handling this, Toyota was on the hot seat a couple of weeks ago because they had the largest settlement ever.
Right.
They're going to blow that right out of the water.
They're going to blow that out of the water.
Toyota's like, shoo! Because they are not in the press anymore. All you hear is GM wall to wall.
Unbelievable.
Hey, let me reiterate this for any of the corporations listening, because you know corporations are people, they listen. Companies. Let me read this again. GM didn't fix the deadly ignition switch because it would have cost up to $1 per car.
Can you believe it?
Look, this whole bean counting.
This is worse than the TV movie.
Okay. Well,
this only costs a dollar.
Where you think, you know what? If I have to spend a dollar on every vehicle, times all the hundreds of thousands that we have on the road, or maybe millions, you know, gee, that's a lot of bucks. Guess what? Killing people and having faulty products destroy your reputation does far more damage than the $1 repair we've ever done.
Listen. You destroy your reputation forever, and nobody will ever drive your piece of crap because even your president won't let her child drive it with the faulty, you know, ignition. So, I mean, quit shooting yourself in the foot.
I mean,
grow up.
You know, well, you know, listen. If you made a movie of this, you know, and he said, yes, in the movie class action. Well, you know, if you take a dollar times 175,000 units, you wouldn't believe it. Nah, come on. Well, why don't they say $300? Well, why don't they say a dollar? Who would believe something fracking stupid like that? Who would believe that? A dollar. This is the truth.
At one, just any, pick one of them, of their annual retreats or their weekend meeting at the steakhouse at the Holiday Inn.
It costs them more than that.
Their cokes cost more than this.
Listen,
they could have just pleased.
It cost them more to prepare CEO
testimony.
Barbara for that testimony.
Mm-hmm. So, and guess what? I don't care if she announced that she had fired the entire staff and had hand repaired every ignition and stayed up all night doing it, it would still have ruined the reputation of GM. You know? There's nothing to do now that you've already literally killed people.
Well, now, see, and I didn't have it here. I thought I had this clip here when Maggie, the reporter, the daughter of Gene Hackman in the film, she's first sitting down with Dr. Getcher in the office, and you see the car, and the car is an impact. You see all the damage. He says, boy, 30 miles an hour, you have a lot of damage. They said, well, tell us something about this car. You know, what'd you do? He said, oh, yeah. He said, but don't worry about that. We fixed that model in the next car year.
Yeah.
We fixed it, but they didn't recall those cars they already had out.
Of course. They're just driving around like little bombs.
Let them blow up because if they sue us and if they win, they might win $200,000.
If
they win.
Yeah.
If they have a lawyer that will take us to court.
To paraphrase our great leader.
Our great leader?
Junior.
Oh, Junior, yes.
To paraphrase Shrub.
The war in Iraq is over.
Our corporations learning? I have to ask this question.
Is they is or is they not? Let's go.
We have this recurrent theme today.
Mm-hmm.
We've had this happen in the 70s. We've had this happen in the 80s. We've had it happen in the 90s. And now here we are again. And even in our own country, we just mentioned that, you know, Toyota just a few months ago got their head knocked off for the same type of crap.
How many billions was it?
It was
billions. Billions, yeah.
So my point is, company, are you learning the lesson yet? Spend the dollar and drive happily into the profitable sunset. Or, you know, penny pinch, kill a lot of people, get dragged into Congress, get dragged into courts, and then end up with a shit name.
That's but the problem is, it don't hurt BP. It didn't hurt BP. So, hey, if it didn't hurt BP, why is it going to hurt us?
Well, that's the way companies think. All money, isn't it? Because you know what's easier than having to repair every ignition? Just buy another Republican.
Well, now you can buy.
Yes.
Another Republican.
And see, that investment in the Supreme Court paid off.
Absolutely correct. You get what you pay for.
And I'm
finally, they're saying, finally we're getting what we paid for.
You put enough gold bullion on the scales of justice.
On the scales of justice.
Yeah, I mispronounced that. Sorry, scales.
Yeah, oh, right.
They tilt in your favor. That's what I hear. You know, just takes a little.
On the Scalia scales of justice, WC? On the Scalia scales of justice. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, there is...
Now, this is an unrelated story, but I just want to mention it before we run out of time. But there was this other really big story going on in the news that's been really infuriating. Because we've been complaining about it forever, but now finally Congress is complaining about it.
Oh, Congress is complaining about them?
Because... It involves the spies of America, the secret
the CIA.
And
you know, they spied on everybody in the world. That was great. They're our enemies.
Okay.
Then they start spying on Americans. Then the Sea of Paris. And we went, oh, well, okay then. And then now we just find out, yeah, what the hell, we're spying on everybody and Congress. So I just wanted to mention this because of what you said about this movie and GM. Their solution to when people start investigating was an avalanche of documents.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Avalanche.
And we have the same thing happen with the CIA recently. Because if you notice, this whole thing has been going on for years, this scandal with the domestic spy. So when they finally, this was only, and this, by the way, this part of it is only dealing with torture.
Right.
Because they had the tapes and everything else of the people they tortured.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Well, first, you remember they destroyed the tapes illegally. And then they're like, whoops, we accidentally ordered them destroyed. Yeah. Okay, so all the evidence gone, all this stuff. Anyway, now they, we said, okay, we're investigating. We want all the files. So then they did an info dump after delaying for years, of course. But when they were finally forced to, when Congress said they want to see it, they said, hey, to begin with, we won't deliver any files to Congress. Nothing. You have to come out to our undisclosed location in the middle of Virginia in the far is a shed. If
yeah.
We have the files. Okay. But when they went out there, it was something like, did you hear, something like 9 million pages?
Right, 9 million.
Right. And to make it even worse, they were scrambled in a computer, right, with no indexing.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what did class action. Class action.
So then they demanded that they get some indexing and some clarification, blah, 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 blah. And so they gave them partial help. But even with the partial help, they start finding all kinds of incriminating data. So then they said, well, we want all these. Then they said, oh, you can't take anything off. Now that. Well, they printed copies out there when they took them back to Congress and started an investigation. And when that's when we get the.
Well, how were they allowed to print copies and take them out?
Because they did. But then they found that all the computers, all their staff computers in the Congress were accessed and all the files were deleted. So everything they found has been deleted. All the thousands of pages of incriminating data has disappeared.
What
happened?
That's
why this investigation has gotten really heated, and now she's saying, what in the heck? You know. But I just want to say it's the exact same thing. We have this neat little pattern of hide the data by a mountain of everything we've ever done. You know, every memo on coffee and, you know, should we have it as a decaf this week has been added to the pile. But then if you do shift through and finally found the pinto light that burns brightest in the night of the exploding tailgate, when you find that one thing, boy, they still aren't guilty because they just, you know, oh, thanks for finding it. And that
right, well, Bert, that was, yeah. Gee, yeah. We couldn't find it either. I'm glad you found it.
Here's the problem, and this gets back to the sunshine laws. There's a problem in America where this is okay. There's a problem that it's being practiced. Now, that you do things for profit, and damn the consumer, damn the citizen, damn everybody. You do what you want to do, and when you're caught doing it, then you stonewall, you obfuscate, you bury the evidence, you do everything possible, and then when you're finally found out and dragged kicking and screaming before Congress and lying and everything else, you know, then you what? You still don't give a damn, you still don't change, and then you just get a little slap on the wrist, maybe a fine. There's this culture of corruption is epidemic, and you see it from the CIA to the GMs to the everywhere else. And I think transparency and any kind of help that the citizens of this country could get should become the law of the land because we're getting destroyed by this practice.
Well,
it's destroying our democracy.
My thing is, this country is going to hell in a handbasket. In the last, and because of Obama.
I want to see the report on that handbasket.
Yes, sir.
Where you prove
I'm sorry.
It went to hell.
I'm sorry, I can't. You're not authorized to see that.
Uh-huh.
See, you don't have the clearance to see that.
You don't have the authority to even say that.
Well,
unsubstantiated statement.
That's true, but I'll go to Guantanamo now.
We can just say this country. Go ahead.
I guess I go to Guantanamo right now then. This is a I didn't say we have a big big gaff. Are you with us?
Yes.
Big gaff. So
we covered everything from the movies.
Have you been listening to our trying to coordinate our through class action to GM?
Yeah.
And what do you think?
Well, first of all, I mean, everybody should see the movie Class Action. I mean, it's, you know, videotape, and I'm sure it's on these Netflix program, you know, things and stuff.
Yep.
That Class Action was mind-boggling. And,
absolutely.
I'm sure there was some kind of pressure from the automotive industry to hold that picture down. I'm sure that we don't know about it, but there was a lot of thing to keep it from getting bigger than it was, because it wasn't in their best interest to have that picture become any more popular than it was. That was a tremendous picture. The thing, again, like you said, it was cheaper to settle the lawsuits than to prevent the problem or fix the problem. And then the other thing was that you mentioned was the thing about sending all the information. I mean, that's just so clever. Somebody asks you for information, instead of hiding it, send them everything.
That's right.
Send them, like you said, they went back 35 years or something and sent 35 years worth of information. And somewhere in that 35 years of information was the information that the investigators wanted to find. But and you can't, I mean, it's such a smart thing. You can't condemn them for sending you all the information.
Right.
But you
sent
them everything.
The thing I like
that
about
was,
that movie
that was brilliant.
But you see Lawrence Fishburne in the office before the people with, 100,000 boxes, it seemed like. And Gene Hackman comes up and says, "What's going on? We got evicted?" He says, "No, this is thanks, you know, Argo Motors."
Yes.
He says, "Get to see what they're
doing."
They
wanted one file from one file cabinet. They sent them every file cabinet. They were in the millions or more of information, of items, and they only wanted one thing. That was brilliant.
Right.
And, I mean, this is how, you know, criminal-minded you can be, that you take a criminal mind to think of something like that.
Well, that's,
you know.
And right away, Gene Hackman, he started laughing. He said, "Can't you see what they're doing?" He said, "You want one piece of paper? The fudge out." He said, "Send me the bunny man." That's it. I know what I want. That's the only thing I want. I want none of this other garbage. And then when they sent that to them, they were showing Maggie, his daughter. He said, "Yes, this is everything on the bunny man." And he said, "But it's filed in our own files. They made up for an arcane file system." And they showed it to her. He said, "Yeah, here it is." And they put the numbers, it's supposed to be 4305, and they sent it 0524. And then, to make it top it off, even that, when she got there to look at the file system in the big folder that they sent her, that file wasn't even in there. They didn't even send it on top of all those paperwork. So, you know, this is the same thing what they've done here. And the Senate committee caught them on it. And this is what I want to ask you, the guy. You're the entrepreneur. Is art, or is art imitating life?
The also, I was also suspicious of this thing, that this woman was the president of the company. It's like, she worked there for years, but I wonder if they made her the president in anticipation of the fall. That, you know, that she was going to, you know, that let her, they'd be less sympathetic to attack a woman and stuff like that. I mean, they'd be more sympathetic and then wouldn't want to attack a woman. You know, I mean, she became the president. I'm just wondering if that was part of their strategy to put this woman up there
well
front.
But the question,
you know,
I wanted to get to you is art imitating life, or is life imitating art?
Yes.
I mean, the movies now. I mean, how much would you believe, I mean, would it even be in the realm of possibility that these people wouldn't fix a part that cost a dollar? I mean, you could never put that in the movies. You'd have to say, no, well, if we're going to do this movie, no, it would have to make it $50 or $100 or $300. A dollar? And they wouldn't fix it?
runaway greed. That's what it is.
I mean, it just the greed has gotten so out of hand now that it's just mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling. So go ahead.
On those on what's the name MSNBC scam thing, the show about when they show all these scammers and stuff like that. You know, they were showing how powerful it is for a guy who's cheating the people, stock dealers and things like that, stockbrokers and different ones, how easy they can cheat somebody if they give some money to a good organization. You know what I mean? A guy gives $10,000 to some help the handicapped or something like that. He gets publicity for that. Then they said he can walk in your house and sell you anything because you just read yesterday that he gave $10,000 to a charity or something like that. You know what I mean? It's just it's amazing. I mean that they can do something like that, and you know they just it gives them like a free pass to they're beyond suspicion, and I mean that's just amazing how all these guys are scam. They give some. I mean, but they're given $10,000 now. They stole $300,000 that week, but they give $10,000 to a church or help the blind kids or something, and they get so much good publicity from that. And, you know, you say, well, they must be good, but you have no idea the magnitude of how much they're stealing. And it's a, you know.
Well,
but
the Koch brothers don't even do that. The Koch brothers don't even do that. I mean.
Their thing is just crazy. They're just. But they make themselves sound like a victim. I saw something they said yesterday, the guy said. About how one of the brothers, Charles, or so I didn't even know their first names, said that they were being picked on and stuff like that, and that they had given some money to some charity or something, they didn't give money to charity because it would make the people dependent on them. I think that's the thing. We did you a favor by not. Oh, you know what it's like? It's like in The Help. If you remember in the movie The Help. The woman, the maid asked, could the family she was working for loan them, they needed $75, if you remember, to enroll her son the woman needed $75 to enroll her son in college. $75 back in the day. And the woman that she worked for said, oh, I'll help you out. And then she told her, by helping her, she says, I'm not going to loan you the money because I'm helping you because then you'd be in debt. I'm helping you by keeping you out of debt.
Yeah.
You know, when you can deal with somebody that thinks that way, you know, I'm not going to help you get an artificial leg because, you know, then you'd be walking around and you might get hit by a car. So this way you can stay at home and not be able to come outside because you don't have an artificial leg, but I'm saving you from getting hit by a car.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought it up. I'm glad you brought that up because that's what they're doing here in the state of North Carolina, and by that matter, I'm going to bring in our chair of the Democratic Party and Mr. Randy Vola, Chairman.
Yes,
Vola.
Sir.
Is that what the Republican Party wants to do here in the state of North Carolina? They want to help us out by not giving us Saturday and Sunday voting.
It's pretty disingenuous. I mean, yeah, how they could claim to be helping anybody out is beyond me. I mean, if you believe in an actual robust democracy, then you believe in making the availability to vote as open and free as possible. But let's face it, we've had to struggle the entire time as a country in terms of expanding the franchise. It did not start off with everybody voting because only a small select few wanted to control the democracy. So it's kind of ironic that the Republicans, who claim to be the party of Lincoln, who actually did a lot to expand the franchise, are trying to contract the franchise as much as possible in the 21st century.
Well, yeah, but see, are we talking about Abraham Lincoln or are we talking about Lincoln Continental? I mean, are we talking about the same Lincoln?
Well, I mean, do you remember Lincoln Rockwell?
Yes.
I think when they cite that, when they cite Lincoln, they forget that that's the Lincoln they're connected to from the 1960s. Michael, you may be the only one who remembers who that is.
Lincoln Rockwell. Well, George, you remember from Lincoln Rockwell, Gaff? I know you
yeah.
know.
Yeah. Yeah, these guys
that's
like
that's
to cite
a, that was a great
Lincoln.
Reference. That was a great reference, and just so just educate the people. Say, tell them something about that the neo-Nazi, because they don't that name won't strike a bell to. I mean, we're up there in age. We know. Explain who this guy was a little bit.
Yeah,
well, Lincoln Rockwell was the leader of the Nazi Party, and he was promoting those values while we were trying to get the Civil Rights Act passed. And the Voting Rights Act passed. I mean, I wasn't born, but my father has a series of tapes from a radio guy, Ernie, I think it's Ernie Pyle show, that had him on there. You know, the old reel-to-reels? My mother used to work at a radio station in the 60s, and I have all this at the house, and so you can hear Rockwell on there, and the guy's wild, you know, trying to defend his positions.
Well, I remember seeing him on TV.
By the way, that's a great archive you have there.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because Pyle asks him, he says, it seems like you're waving your hands so fast you're batting away bees. I mean, because the guy is all animated, but what he's saying is racial theory and supremacist theory. And I mean, I'll an interesting sidebar. In my turn, I've been in North Carolina more than half my life, and I've worked all over the state, but I'm the son of a German immigrant, my dad, and when I was down east, I used to run across these people that would be flying these stars and bars in their cotton fields down by Aurora, you know, Bath, North Carolina, and all that area, Little Washington. And I asked the farmer, I said, you're flying this thing, and it says heritage, not hate, kind of sewn in the flag. And I said, well, how can you separate one from the other? I mean, part of the heritage was obviously hate. I'm not judging you because, you know, These are your ancestors, but I said, you can't separate them. They're not mutually exclusive. And then he argued with me, and I said, well, let me tell you something. If I put a swastika up in my front yard and said I'm first-generation German, and I said heritage, not hate, people would laugh me out of the neighborhood. Everyone knows
right.
what that iconography means. And then he goes, well, that seems like an interesting point. So we're dealing with people.
Oh, heritage.
They still haven't kind of evolved past some of these points. And I ran across a white fellow I know who's a lawyer whose family's been here in Chatham and down in Lumberton for a couple hundred years. And he just came to me and he said, Randy, what they won't tell you point blank is what I'm going to tell you. The Republican Party and the Tea Party people in particular are hiding behind all this rhetoric, but the truth of it is, it all comes down to racial issues. Now, this is a old Southerner telling this to me. And he says, if they tell you otherwise, they're lying to you. He just told me that last week in the parking lot of Food Lion.
Hey, I've been saying this for, of course, I'm not an old white guy, but I've been saying this for a long time now.
I know you have. That's why I'm telling you, Austin, that you're basically other people see it the same way you do. But they're not, you know, they're not always willing to come out and say it. But he just came out and said it to me.
That's right. They're all not willing to come out and say it. And the problem is when people don't stand up, the minority, the small minority take the mantle and are in charge. And that's what happened. And that's what's happening here in this state of North Carolina. When the people didn't get out to vote, they gave up the mantle to these regressive nutballs.
Yes.
Even to the fact now, I mean, before it was, forget Obamacare. They'll never make that 7 million. Now it's 7.1 million, and they say, well, you know what? They're all lying. They're fudging the numbers. Well, has anybody asked these people, why would the insurance companies fudge the numbers? Why would they fudge numbers?
It doesn't matter. They
right.
They want to disparage it in any way possible.
And you know what?
Care.
This 7 million is even close to what it is because there's over 8 million seniors. That donut hole is now filled. I mean, and we got women now who will get free mammograms per year. We got women and men that are getting free vaccinations, and they get free health screening, and they get free colonoscopy tests, and there's no limits on yearly coverage, and no more lifetime caps, and no more pre-existing conditions. I mean, what? Wait a minute. You got to pay a little bit more now for your insurance. What the heck do you want? Everything for
the
free?
The problem, Michael, the problem is that our system does not do a good job of allocating direct and indirect costs. So we've had an indirect cost for people being uninsured. All of us on this phone call, if we've had insurance all our lives, are already paying for the uninsured. It's an indirect cost tagged onto our bill.
Well, listen. Speaking about that, wait a minute. I'm gonna read you something. I was sick 2 weeks ago. I mean, you talking about upset stomach and everything that goes along with that. I went to the emergency room. I just got a bill. Now, I got insurance. My disability was paid for, but they sent me what they sent out to the insurance company, $2,997.05. That's what it cost me to go to the emergency room to get a bag of fluid put in me, receive nausea medication, and for the doctor to come in 45 minutes later and say to me, "How are you feeling?" I said, "I'm doing much better." He said, "Okay, go home. I got some nausea medication for you. Go home and get bed rest." $3,000. Now, what happens if I didn't have insurance? Where would this $3,000 go? It would go to everybody else that has health insurance.
Yeah, of course.
That's where it would go. So what are they talking about here? I mean, this nausea medication that it gave me was $340-something for, I think it was 30 capsules. I sent it through the mail order. I just got it back with the cost. You know, the cost was $15. Now, why does it cost 300 and something if I don't go through mail order? Because we're getting ripped off by the insurance company. And why is it
right?
My cousin, my first cousin, wife, is very, very, very sick in the hospital. She just was in the hospital. She went to the emergency room. They did not have a bed for her. She was sitting in the emergency room for over 3 days before she finally got a bed in this hospital, Einstein Hospital in the Bronx. And when they found out that she had a mass on her brain. They're now moving her to the main hospital. It took another 2 days, and now she's in the main hospital. But it took almost a week. Why is that? Because they're closing down hospitals. If the insurance company cannot buy the hospital or the pharmaceutical company can't buy the hospital, they're closing them down. Simple as that. Because they don't care in this country. It's not about saving lives. And the lie that these Republicans, this progressive party keeps putting down, "Oh, we have the best medical care, best doctors." Yeah, that's correct. And you know what? If they treat you. I was just listening to a report before he went on the air today about the hospitals in that 30, as they've shown all across the states, all the hospitals, and many of the hospitals, 30% of the hospitals across the country are Catholic hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot what city it was. The Catholic hospital was going to take over this one municipal hospital, and the doctor said no. If they come in here, we're all leaving and going to other hospitals because we don't want to tell our patients that we can't help them if they are pregnant. So the hospital did not sell out to the Catholic Association. So, hey, I'm Catholic. I mean, so what are we talking about here? This is getting out of hand. It is out of hand, and this did not take off. This did not take off until we had a black person in the White House. This is when it took off. I rest my case.
You were ranting.
Well, I was ranting. I'm sorry about that, Randy, but well, what do you think about that?
Well, number one, I think that when you have the G20 countries, and I think 19 of them have some form of universal health care, and we're the only one that's been going this other direction, we're out of step with the other industrialized nations when it comes to health care. And everyone, you know, pointed to the Canadian model, but there are even other models. Germany has a great model. France has a great model. When I was a German Marshall Fellow, I got ill in Italy. I went in there, and not only was I waited on by beautiful Italian nurses, but I didn't have to pay anything for my visit, you know, for 14 hours, you know, emergency room. So we're just out of step with the rest of the world, but it's not the only place that we are out of step. And unfortunately, our democracy is drifting further and further away from us as the Supreme Court makes these abstract rulings kind of devoid from an understanding or trying to, quote, not interfere with the political reality. They know damn well that these rulings are going to have political outcomes. Otherwise, they wouldn't be Supreme Court justices. They're just trying to hide and say, oh, well, we're going to make this ruling, but it's not going to have the effect, or we're going to pretend like we're going to ignore the effect. They've put our democracy up for sale. We're back in the position we were in the 19th century. I mean, seriously. And Obama tried, you know, made opposed Citizens United. We haven't been able to get a move to amend. But, I mean, I'm not going to argue with you that a lot of this stuff came forward because you got an African-American president. But the fact of the matter is most of those groups have been rump groups in our political culture for a while, the John Birchers, the Libertarians, these various groups that kind of form. I mean, they were the ones that were active, you know, with Nixon in 1968, and they are the ones that were active back in the 40s. With the Red Scare, and they were the ones active in the 20s, all the way back to the Lost Cause narrative. It's not as if this just came. It's just each time they reform, and Obama became the focal point.
Right. And to play into something that Mike often harps on, if you look at demographics and the shift in this country, I think that's also something that is kind of forcing their hand, that now they're at that, you know, to use one of their terms, they're at the end of the line, and their timetable has been ramped up.
Right, they're at
and
the end time.
They're forcing
right.
all kinds of changes right now, and just ramming things through because this is their time.
Right, absolutely.
And I think that is a large part of it. It happens to also be, you know, focused right now racially on Obama, but I think it's also just timing, pure timing.
And because we don't have much time, but that leads us right into Noah. And I know Gap just wrote an article on Noah, but is this sort of what happened at Noah's time? It was a little too late, and they were trying to grasp the stores. Everybody getting on the ship, but Noah only wanted animals on the ship.
They only want animals on the ship?
Yeah, well, that was the story of Noah, that all these people wanted to get on the ship, and Noah said, no, God wants to save the animals.
Start again,
right?
In other words, get off to a fresh start.
I mean, look, it's a mythical story. It's an allegory, and
right.
If you understand the Torah, it's not meant to be taken literally. It's meant to be an allegory to learn from, and it's a redaction of many, many stories, you know, that came down through the oral tradition, not all of which came through Judaism. I mean, there's a flood story in almost every major culture. So the notion of it's like cleansing and, you know, man is evil and done all these things, and I don't know why people are bent out of shape. It's just, it's an allegory, and it's meant to teach you.
Glenn Beck said it was true.
In my review, I wrote this day, I just finished it an hour ago, I said that, you know, that you really, this is not a movie that you should have a movie critic comment on. You need to see it so you can take your own interpretation of it because of how you look at the religious aspects of it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's not like you're watching Marlon Brando and something and you can say, oh, this was good or bad. It's like Randy just said, it's the interpretation that you make based on your background and how you look at things. It's a very individual thing to comment on that movie. And that's what I said. I said, you should not trust a movie critic to direct you in this movie. Go see it for yourself. And, you know, your religious views and things like that and your view of man will shape how you see it. It's not something where a critic can just say, oh, this was good or bad. You know.
Well, I always, since I like books, I always tell people to read the book before they see the movie. I'd urge people to go out and read
the Bible.
Gilgamesh. Read the original. It's the best one.
Guys, well, I want to thank you guys for being here. And one other question I got you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I sent you a text the other day about what are we going to do in North Carolina about getting people to believe in Obamacare, especially our elected officials?
I think, first of all, we at all these county conventions that are coming up, people need to come out and say, look, this is a program that was important. It's a signature achievement. The complaints people have with it actually relate to, you know, the Heritage Foundation white papers and others of the 1990s. They're not democratic values. We can improve it, and we need to stand tall behind it and push our elected officials to go forward. The problem with the Democrats in general is that for some reason the kind of thought leaders and leaders in our party from the national on down tend to worry about what the Republicans are going to do and always try to formulate something on the basis of, well, what are they going to do, as opposed to being strong and say, well, what are we going to do, and have an affirmative plan. You know, when you're constantly attacking, think about this as a brand. So let's just say, Michael, you have an airline and I have an airline. You have Lawson Airlines, I have Buller Airlines. If I spend all my time saying don't fly Lawson's airlines because they're terrible, eventually the people don't want to fly. And we spend all of our time attacking the other political party with negativity. So eventually a huge chunk of the electorate says, I don't want anything to do with politics. What we ought to be doing is saying, I stand affirmatively for these values. I'm going to hold them accountable ideologically for things that they've done that didn't work. And be strong. And you know that's my personality. Lead out there. You know, I can accept the fact if my opponent is correct on something and modulate my position. But I certainly am not going to be weak and sit here and get punched all the time and say, hey, quit punching me. I mean, yes, it worked for Ali, you know, in the famous rope-a-dope battle, and it's like fighting Foreman. But do you want to get punched for 7 rounds?
I don't
think so. I would rather dance around and throw my punches and show them who we are. I don't want to sit there and roll up and get punched for 7 rounds by George Foreman. And I certainly think Democrats need to stop adopting that strategy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. A little positive output can be welcome, because I know a lot of people who are just exhausted by all the negativity all the time.
Before we go there, Chairman, what's coming up that we need to send people to? What events are coming up?
What? I couldn't hear you. Someone was
what
back on
yelling. What events are coming up that we need to send people to?
I'm
going to
be down tomorrow for the Wilmington 10 unveiling of the documentary by Cash Michaels. So Ben Chavis will be in Wilmington. I think Bev Perdue's going to be there at the dinner tomorrow night. Tonight's international night up in Raleigh. And I'll be at conventions tomorrow. And at the so I'll be down in Charlotte next week for the Mecklenburg Convention. So I hope to see you there. Let's do an interview.
Yes, so we will. I'll be there.
And okay. Make sure you hug a Ukrainian while you're international yeah. night.
Hug a Ukrainian night. That's what that's going to be.
Okay.
Night.
All right.
Right, sir.
Mr. Chairman. So yeah. I would offer this weekend. Please try to spread the word. So there's a really interesting book that just came out. It was featured on NPR this week. But tell everybody in the Democratic Party to read it. Very interesting book. It's called Idea Whose Time Has Come.
What is it called?
It is An Idea Whose Time Has Come.
An Idea Whose Time Has Come?
Yep. Two presidents, two parties, and the battle for the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It's a history of it and what they had to do and what they had to compromise and how they had to force that into law. And it shows the parties in action. It shows them both demonized and painted in this book. It's a really interesting piece. It has a lot of presidential. And I would just urge everybody to read it because it does have lessons for us today on how to work even
that's
in
good.
A...
Well, this, that sounds like an exciting book. I'm interested in that.
Todd Purdom wrote it, but it's a fascinating book, very, very good read, but it does have parallels to today, and it also illuminates today and tells us how we got to where we are now because of the great divide that happened.
Okay, and...
I'm interested in that, and by the way, one other thing, Michael, on the 8th, I'm going to be on a panel discussion with Claude Pope, the chair of the GOP, and the chair of the Libertarian Party. So I'll report to you how that goes.
Well, where's that going to be?
It'll be interesting. In Raleigh, Mullins, if you're interested, I could try to get you to come in there, and you could, because we have not been side by side the entire time I've been chair. So
yeah.
If you're interested, it's Tuesday in Raleigh. I could probably see if I can wangle you access.
Tuesday, the 8th, that's the 9th, or is that the 8th?
8th.
The 8th.
It should be an interesting discussion. I have one point I'm going to ask them. Libertarians are against public financing, and yet they took the tax checkoff money all these years, so I'm curious how they can reconcile that.
I wonder how that works.
I mean, if
yeah.
that's your whole philosophical bent, that you're against public funding of institutions and that you took the money, you know, essentially you have a logic error within your own party platform.
Absolutely.
I'd love to hear their explanation to that.
Okay, and Mr. Gaff, next week I want you to do a review of Noah for us, and are you going to see the Winter Soldier this weekend?
I think I will.
I probably won't, because the people who are going to see Winter Soldier are going to see Winter Soldier no matter what. I mean, you know, I don't. If something else is out, I want to see it, because Winter Soldier, it's just, you know, I mean, people who love it will love it. So,
well,
I had
no Captain America.
We got to, and we got to go. That's my cue. I just got the cue. We got to go. Ladies and gentlemen, we will talk to you. And I'm going to see Winter Soldier tomorrow. All right. Mr. Gaff, I'll talk to you later. And
all right.
Everybody else, have a good weekend.